Welcome to Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight, featuring Coast to Coast AM from September 5th, 1997.
From the high desert and the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening or good morning, as the case may be, across all these many prolific time zones stretching from the Hawaiian and Tahitian island chains, with visions of grass skirts and hammocks and all the way eastward to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands. How you doing in St. Thomas this morning? To me, it looks like that damn hurricane's headed straight for you in St. Thomas. I haven't heard the latest update, but last time I checked, it looked like it was headed straight for St. Thomas. So I hope you're doing well, battening down the hatches. It's a Category 1, last I checked, and you can certainly weather that, but prepare is the key word. South into South America and north to the pole, and worldwide, of course, on the internet. This is Coast Coast AM. I'm Art Bell. So many things to report on. Albert Taylor, the author of Soul Traveler, which is going to become a movie. Ooh, how exciting. He's going to be our guest here shortly. And if you have never heard Al Taylor, you've got a real treat coming. I have a number of announcements to make and a couple things to report, and then we'll get underway. Regarding Danion Brinkley, I was in communication with his cousin at least a couple of times today. And Danion remains in intensive care. Has gone to a private room in intensive care. I am intentionally not, on his request, reporting the hospital where he is, because they would be absolutely inundated, as you might well expect. The information I have is that he has been moved from critical to stable. However, he continues to hemorrhage. His brain continues to hemorrhage. He has blood, in essence, running down both sides of his brain. He's taking steroids. They're very concerned, and normally Danion would take blood thinners because of his heart condition. But obviously, if they allow it to get too thick, it clots. He has heart trouble. So it's a very dicey situation between his blood being too thin and too thick. He is taking steroids, and if they are able to stabilize him sufficiently, he will be facing brain surgery on Sunday or Monday. And that is as much as I know, with the exception of one more item, and that is, he said, if you don't believe in the power of prayer, you should be where I am. And he had that word to me earlier today, so he wants to thank all of you. At this point, he doesn't want any visitors at all. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here now. I'd be there. Danion has a way of handling this kind of thing when it comes. And he goes into a period of deep personal meditation and tries to heal himself. And that is what he is doing. So I monitor as closely as I'm able the present condition and the situation with regard to Danion Brinkley. It is still very critical. He's facing, if they can stabilize him, a very difficult surgery. And all I can ask is that you pray for Danion. And I guess I want to say something about the power of prayer. I believe in it. Now, at the risk of getting myself in trouble, which I always am, anyway, I will say to you, I am not absolutely certain about why it works. But I know that it works. I'm not precisely certain of the source of the power of prayer, personally, but I have no question about the fact that it works. The power of healing, is just beyond question, in my opinion. So prayers are in order. I wish I could tell you definitively that I understood why it works. I cannot. I can just tell you I know it works, and Danyan certainly needs it right now. Now, unfortunately, reporting on other items, Mother Teresa has passed on. And there are certain things going on with respect to the media that I don't quite understand. During the day today, I watched carefully the coverage of both the passing of Mother Teresa and the continuing coverage of the Princess Diana funeral and story. And to give you just a sense of the priorities, I have in front of me this hour's Reuters news. And in order, the stories read, the top story is crowds await Diana procession. The second story is more photographers investigated. The third story is Diana did not expect to remarry. And the fourth story is followers mourn Mother Teresa. Now, both of these women were good women. There's no doubt about that, but I am not quite square in my own mind about why continuing coverage of the funeral and story of Princess Diana overshadows the death of Mother Teresa, who did so much for so long, for so many. There you go. That's two. There are many who say there will be one more. And I hope that is not Danyan. And somebody wrote me this. Art, whose time really had come? Art, at 2:03 p.m. today, I heard the announcement of Mother Teresa's death. How strangely ironic. Can the world stand a second funeral of the magnitude of this one for Diana? Wouldn't Mother Teresa actually be far more deserving of the pomp, respect, and tears awarded to the princess? Would, in fact, the Saint of Calcutta have even gotten anywhere near the send-off being given to Diana? Would the world have stopped? Would the tabloids and the regular media paid her the attention, offered the tributes and the amount of airtime given to Diana? Would millions of followers have been laid, flowers rather, been laid at the steps of Catholic churches by followers and consulates around the world? Would hundreds of thousands of heartful renderings have been offered in books of condolences? Would world leaders feel slighted if they couldn't attend her funeral? Would Elton John, smitten with his grief, be but only able to rewrite a few words of an old song rather than write a new one? Would the stars of music in the movie industry take up the cause of a saint that can never be replaced? Aren't we really just a pop culture whose drug of choice is kish other than truly caring world society? Perhaps there are things going on we cannot see, nor should. Perhaps the death of Diana, the funeral for Diana, is really the acknowledgement and funeral that Mother Teresa would never have been accorded. The forces of the unseen world, the energies of the cosmos, do often work in strange, yet not often understood ways. Mother Teresa, in recent years, has fought to remain alive on this earth until now. Was Mother Teresa unwilling to die and give up her work here on earth? Is it possible the unknown was awaiting a significant event as the death of the princess to act as a catalyst for the death of the saint? Was Diana's death and all its global aftermath used as a door to channel Mother Teresa peacefully across the bridge to the other side? One can only wonder. That's from Ken. So we have lost two. And many, many, many have faxed me suggesting that it is always three, that the world loses. It occurs in threes. So that essentially to this hour is the news. The only other really big, important piece of news continues to be this information that the Russians seem to have lost track of 100 suitcase-sized, 1 kiloton nuclear weapons that can be detonated in about 30 minutes by an individual, single individual. And it was quite interesting. Yesterday morning, I was doing an interview with WWRC in Washington, D.C., my new affiliate there. And they asked me, Lord, how do you find your topics? And instead of a direct answer, because I don't really have one, topics usually find me. I asked them about this story, and they were had just become aware of the Russian story. And I said, I'll tell you this, if I were where you are, I would be wanting to have those found very quickly. Washington, D.C., Jerusalem, I don't know, what would you imagine would be the first target for a suitcase nuke? Probably not Pahrump, although the way things have been going, one never knows. At any rate, coming up in a moment, Al Taylor.
Snyder last week. Did you know that all the guest information and show information is available online at www.coasttocoastam.com? Our webmaster, Lex, has posted everything right down to the bumper music. Also on the website is a service called Streamlink. Man, is this great. For about 15 cents a day, you can have access to live streaming audio no matter where you are, as long as you're close to a computer. You'll also get archived shows from the last 90 days, and you can hear the show on your computer anytime you wish. Plus, you'll have access to my Tuesday night chats. That's once a month. So get the inside story on the show and the inside story on what's going on with Coast to Coast AM. You simply log on to coasttocoastam.com. That's coasttocoastam.com, and you'll be glad you did. Streamlink, it's a great service. It's private. You even get a private email address directly to me. So just log on to coasttocoastam.com and read all about it.
Now we take you back to the night of September 5th, 1997, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Well, let me tell you one more thing. UPS is still really screwed up. I ordered a radio from Amateur Electronic Supply in Las Vegas, a ham radio store, Wednesday. Now, this is not rocket scientist stuff. Pahrump is over the, Las Vegas is over the hill from Pahrump, about 65 miles. So all they had to do, no air involved, all they had to do was get this radio, which was coming in two boxes from Las Vegas to Pahrump. 65 miles. No aircraft, no special handling, just put it in the truck and bring it on over. Well, as of tonight, they have finally located one of the boxes at UPS in Las Vegas, where it remains at the terminal at this hour. The second box, UPS has no tracking information for whatsoever, even though the store has a receipt saying the driver picked it up. There is no tracking. It was not scanned. So we've got one box sitting where it was 2 days ago, and box number two, they know not where. Extremely frustrating. And it's obvious that the strike effect is far from over, because they are not handling things well. One positive comment this morning. As you know, I wrote a book called The Quickening, and just before airtime, I got the following email. Art, from the Houston Chronicle, September 6, Houston Crown Books, which is Houston's largest, now lists The Quickening at number 10 with a bullet. No doubt. Congratulations. That is nice. The Quickening, which is the book and the theme of things that I talk about so much on this program, is available in stores nationwide. All you've got to do now is go in and ask. A lot of them are Barnes & Noble, Superstores, Bookstar, Bookstop, B. Dalton, Borders, Walden Books, and really sort of almost every bookstore now. And either they have it, or they're sold out, or they're trying to get it, or you can get it on order, one of the above. It is called The Quickening by Art Bell. And it explains so very much of what we discuss on this program. It really does a lot more than that. It documents so much of what we discuss on this program. So I recommend it. If you can find it, go to your local bookstore now. I've chewed up most of this half hour with announcements. Let us go to this evening's guest, who is Al Taylor. One time previously on the program. Al, welcome back.
Thank you, Art.
Thank you very much. Great to have you.
Wonderful to be back.
Albert, if you would, give us a short sketch, because that's actually before the bottom of the hour, all we have time for, of who you are and a little bit about your background.
Okay, well, my name is Albert Taylor. I'm an engineer scientist. I've had a secret clearance for the last two decades. I've helped design the stealth fighter, the B-1 bomber. I also have trained to help design components and pressurized docking units on the space station that will be going up next year. I've also trained astronauts in Johnson Space Center, and I've also been a co-designer on numerous satellite components for President Reagan's SDI or Star Wars program. And I'm also the author of Soul Traveler, a guide to out-of-body experiences and the wonders beyond, which is about my personal out-of-body experiences.
This doesn't make sense. You're going to have to explain to us how you get from space shuttles, space stations, SDI stuff, and all that exotic hardware.
To a metaphysical whatever book, spiritual book.
Yes.
Well, I didn't go looking to write the book. The book came to me, and it came to me through the experiences that I've been having since the age of five. And one of the things that, as you know, and I've gotten tons of mail on this subject, one of the things that I didn't know was related to the out-of-body experience is night paralysis. And that's where you wake up in the middle of the night after going to sleep or so, and maybe about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and you're very alert and aware, but you're completely paralyzed.
That's how you got on this program. Some guy, it more than not, happens this way, called my program and said, "Hey, Art, I have this terrible thing that keeps happening to me. I'm paralyzed. I'm in bed, and I'm paralyzed, and I can't move." And he said, "Does anybody else ever have this?" Oh, man, it was a week. My phones kept going, email, I couldn't stop it, and I tried to figure out what was going on. So many people said they were having this. I said, "Look, I'll try to find a guest and try to find out what I can for you about this paralysis," and I found you.
And you changed my life.
So what all these people experience is what?
Well, basically, I found out, first of all, it's been something that's been very frightening in my family for a number of years, even several generations. But what I found out is that paralysis, that when you wake up in the middle of the night and you can't move, what that is that your soul or spirit or astral form or etheric form, whatever you want to call yourself, is disconnected from the physical body. That means it's occupying the same space as the body, but it is not connected to any type of controls or neural functions of the body. So you feel as if you're paralyzed. But what I found out is it's just changing my thoughts to moving my other body, or second body, as Robert Monroe would call it. I was able to leave the physical body and actually consciously leave and look down at the body and eventually travel and fly places, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. It changed my life. It completely removed the fear of death because now I understand what it is to be in the spirit body. After and numerous encounters I would have with non-physical entities, dead relatives, incredible things that I that 6 years ago, if you would have told me I'd be talking about this, let alone experiencing it, I think you were crazy.
Albert, what you are describing sounds very much like Daniel Brinkley describes when he talks about his near-death experience.
Mm-hmm. Very closely related.
Very, very. And so that's what we'll talk about when we come back. Sit tight. We're at the bottom of the hour. Albert Taylor, his book and soon a movie, Soul Traveler, back in a moment.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight, featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from September 5th, 1997. To Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight, featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from September 5th, 1997.
Here's a way I can mix business with pleasure. It, of course, is Cusco. This is a Puramac 3. And I've been using this as bumper music now for, what, about 2 months or so? A month and a half, 2 months, something like that? Had it way ahead of release. It debuted as number 8 before its release on the New Age charts, just because of the airplay here, because we were the only one playing.
Never know what you'll hear on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
They want Americans on their knees begging for help from someone to come and give us relief. They want these families to be on their knees saying, please don't take
That's
our
it.
Homes. Please don't take our cars. Please don't take our jobs.
And then government is the savior.
And government will save you under this umbrella of a one world order where the troops will come in. It's happening now, and it's happening very fast. Why?
Now they realize that the jig is up, the consciousness is raising, the dam has broken, so they've got the pole position in this Indy 500 race, but their car's smoking, it's got bald tires, they're almost out of gas, and in a way, that's almost even more scary because their system's unraveling, falling apart. They prepared for people waking up and fighting back. They just didn't expect it to be this big.
Now we take you back to the night of September 5th, 1997, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Now, back to Albert Taylor. Albert, welcome back.
Thank you, Art.
Albert, before we proceed, what is the soul?
What is the soul?
See, I start out with the easy.
The profoundly easy. Well, the soul that I have found out is exactly what you think you are not. You think that you are your body, but really the consciousness that occupies your body is that soul. That consciousness that occupies the body is timeless. Now, part of the consciousness that you have now while in the body has to do with the body. And so you have animal instincts, a lot of fears and things like that that comes along with being a human in physical form. But when you leave the body, all you have is pure consciousness and pure understanding. And what you become is kind of an observer to reality. So you no longer have the emotional ties or hurt or pain or disappointments that you have while you're in the physical body. The soul is something that evolves through many, many lifetimes and or expressions, as some people would say. And I think the soul is something that is evolving into becoming what I'd like to call a co-creator with God. So we all, and the soul is not something you have in your pocket, like, you know, spare change or something like that. We are the soul. A lot of people believe that we have a soul, but in truth, we are it. Us thinking, us consciousness, us being able to visualize, imagine, all of that, even laugh, that is the soul, pure consciousness.
Hmm. Okay, at the bottom of the hour, I was saying that, actually, you sound just like Daniel. You know, when you're talking about
I'll
this,
I'll take that as a compliment.
Absolutely.
He's a good friend of mine.
Wish him well. He's going through a rough time.
Definitely. Always.
But you really do sound very much like him in what you're saying about what we are when we are not in our body.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is an area of intense interest to me, Albert. In other words, when we die or experience near death, and I've heard it from Daniel, he describes it the same way. There is no fear.
Right.
There is only understanding,
right.
and so forth and so on. No fear. Daniel does not fear death.
Right.
Not at all.
Right.
He'll even joke about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because he's been there. And you're telling me that this soul travel business, if you can achieve it, takes you... Do you think to the exact same realm, or is there some sort of subtle difference, or what?
Well, initially, you know, the one thing about Daniel that really comforted me is I was having these experiences and I had no one to talk to about it because, first of all, there's people in my family who have been having it, but they were so fearful about it and so let's say, affected by religious dogmas, that just talking about something like this terrified them. So when I did meet Daniel, it was wonderful that I met someone that, here he had a near-death, but I've been having these experiences since I was 5, and yet I could talk to him about the experiences in detail, and he understood and could shed some light on the subject. Now, as far as going to the actual places that a person who has a near-death experience goes to, initially I would say yes. Initially, when you leave the body via death or trauma, like a near-death experience, or via the out-of-body experience, you end up on what some people call the astral plane, or you may call it the first level, right above the physical. Most people do go to that level. Some people don't transition beyond that level. So there's a lot of spirits and people who have passed that are on the astral plane. But in the near-death experience, a lot of people transition past that and actually go to a higher level of vibration, and that's where they experience the light that they talk about.
Right.
So some people traveling out of body are capable of going to the astral plane, the mental plane, the causal plane, and some people are even capable of going to the etheric plane where you will see this light. So, and I have been able to do that. I didn't know exactly what I was doing or even why I was doing or even how to measure where I was. And the thing about it was so strange is I was being called or drawn there for a lot of reasons. Sometimes I would go there on purpose, but other times I was being summoned there. And I had experiences with the light, and I was totally confused as to what this light was. I mean, I'm a member of the International Association of Near-Death Studies. numerous friends of mine are members of IONS, and they were talking about, some of them, based on their religious backgrounds, they would say the light is Jesus or the light is God,
sure,
or whatever. So
sure,
when I was having these initial encounters, I didn't know what to think of it. Very confusing.
All right.
And scary.
As I told you in the last show, I've had this paralysis,
mm-hmm,
as many times in my life.
Mm-hmm. Lucky you, Art.
No, not really, because I've never been able to let go. And
even after reading the book, Art?
Not yet, Al, not yet. It's scary. To me,
yeah,
it's really scary.
It can be.
And there's a threshold, and I just can't get past that threshold. It's like I'm a control freak, and I feel myself losing control completely,
mm-hmm,
and I just can't let go. And I remember asking you a question last time that you really couldn't exactly answer, and I don't blame you.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, in America, a lot of people die in their sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Right? A lot
mm-hmm
of people do. Now, how do you know that a good, healthy percentage of those people who died in their sleep weren't soul traveling?
Well, I can only go by my experience, and what I found out is that, first of all, that when I leave my body, I'm not alone. And to tell you the truth, none of us are really alone. We just can't perceive what's really going on around us. We are here for a specific duration, each one of us. Each one of us has a different clock, a different time to do in this particular physical plane.
Sure.
None of that is going to be interrupted just because the soul is capable of temporarily leaving the physical body.
All right, so that's another way of saying if it's your time, you're going to go.
Exactly, exactly. So it's not caused by leaving the body. It is time for you to go, period.
Hmm.
Matter of fact, when I leave the body, I've done some incredible experiences since the last time I talked to you. I get tons of letters about people asking me to pull them out of body. So I have done some experiments like that, and you can literally pull someone out of body.
Oh,
but no one
really
that I have done this to, and I don't do this very often, but no one that I've done this to has been injured in any way, shape, or form. And a lot of times I find when I've gone to visit people in the past, I have found that they're out of body. They're just in sort of a dream state, and they don't know it. I've been able to communicate with them sometimes, and sometimes they would remember me being there, and sometimes they wouldn't.
So somebody can actually request of you to be pulled from their body.
People have, and I have done.
Wow, that's almost soul napping.
Only if they ask.
Now, I've got to ask, Al, could mm-hmm you pull somebody from their body even if they didn't ask?
If they didn't ask?
Yeah.
Would I do that?
No. I said, could you do that?
Yes, you could. You
know,
but
that would be soul napping.
I would say, you know, this is the... See, I thought if it ended at that, then I wouldn't see too much harm with it. But this is what I found out.
You're going to make me afraid to go to sleep.
Well, there's nothing negative that can happen to you, Art, no matter what happens.
It's so
only
you say.
Fear in your head and fear of the unknown. But this is what I found out. A friend of mine, I did pull her out of body for the first time in her whole life.
Yes.
She had an out-of-body experience. And I kind of, after doing that, what I had noticed, or what I found out over the next few days, is that I left her gate unlocked, so to speak. So now she started having out-of-body experiences, spontaneous ones, which were, first of all, she'd never had in her life, and these were kind of uncontrolled, kind of happening to her in the middle of the night since that happened. So
does she now consider that to be a good thing?
Initially, it was very frightening. Because when you're out of body, you're very, you know, it's not like being in the physical, just floating above the body. You are completely weightless. Many avenues open up to you. Many, many sensations. Many, many feelings. Voices. You can see things. I mean, it can be terribly overwhelming if it's your first time.
All right.
So initially, yes, that it was very frightening to her.
All right. Let us describe the lower level. It is possible, Al,
mm-hmm,
and correct me if I'm wrong, but to travel within the boundaries of this world.
Yes.
I mean, for example, to go to Paris.
Oh, yes.
The south of France, perhaps,
mm-hmm,
sounds good. Or wherever you want to travel, you can physically actually go there? And what, when you are in that condition on this plane, do you see? Do you see things as I see them now? I'm looking at my cart machines, my tape player, my cup of coffee with a straw in it,
mm-hmm.
my board. Do you see things that way?
You have the capability of seeing things exactly as you see them in the physical body and more. For instance, one of the early experiments that I did is I came out of body, and it's in my book too, and I heard the shower going on in the hallway, in the bathroom down the hallway.
Huh.
As I began, and just floating in my bedroom, the door was closed. As I began to focus on the sound that I heard out down the hallway, the door and the wall that separated me from the bathroom ceased to be an obstacle, meaning I could see through it. Then I could see the door, and eventually the door of the bathroom ceased to be an obstacle, and I could see through it too and actually see the shower curtains in the other bathroom. But if I chose to, I could even regress and go back and pay more attention to the walls, and I would see the walls. You can get to the point where you can either pay full attention to the physical plane, where you see everything there is, and you even see auras off of almost everything, or you can raise your vibrational rate where you don't perceive anything physical. And there's no hard line, meaning that it's either or. There's the smooth transition where you can just go to seeing incredible things that you never would have dreamed of. So yes, you can see the physical. You can, and you know what? The thing about it, though, the physical. Everybody says, "Well, why don't you go here? Why don't you go check out this?" One person said, "Why don't you go see what secret documents the Russians have and all that?"
Yes.
After you travel out of body, all of that seems so insignificant. Going to physical places. One person said, "Oh, we could go to Tahiti together."
Oh, well, that's
I said,
right.
Yeah, we could.
You see, I'm still thinking in the physical, so I understand that kind of thinking. Tahiti sounds good, South France.
Well,
maybe,
initially, it's wonderful. And matter of fact, that's what I did for a lot of years, is I would just go to different physical places. But then, when I started getting samplings of the non-physical locations, mm-hmm. the physical locations totally paled in comparison. I mean, there's just no draw, no
all right, people will say this, Al.
Mm-hmm.
And I will ask this. To a lot of people, this sounds crazy.
Mm-hmm.
They don't,
I admit that.
They don't believe it. They don't believe it can be done.
Uh-huh.
And if you can really do it, and if you can really travel in the physical plane,
uh-huh.
then you should be able to go somewhere and observe something and come back and describe what you have observed.
Correct.
And prove, therefore, that you can travel astrally.
Correct. Correct.
Now, what proof can you offer that you or anybody else has done this?
Well, in the book, initially, what I did do, I mean, what I did is I would go to several friends of mine that I worked with on the space station, several engineers,
uh-huh.
and sometimes I would tell them, I'm just going to describe, I'd never been there physically, and I'm just going to describe in as much detail as I can remember when I get back what your particular apartment looks like. I had some people set up a number or a letter on the back of the door of a closet or something like that, and I would go and see what the letter was and come back and document it, then check on it later. One person I had, I found out that when I got to her, I knew she was married, but when I got to her house, I found out that her and her husband didn't sleep in the same bed. And I also found out that she slept with a heating pad or something on her leg. So when I came back to the physical, I approached her, a prominent doctor. I approached her and said, you know, I didn't know you and your husband slept in separate beds. And she began to tell me, yeah, he sleeps over there because he has sleep apnea or something like that, and he snores, and it's better for him to be a long way away from me. And then I said to her that I thought there was something wrong with your leg because I perceived it as this white object, and she told me that it was a heating pad or something that she wore around her leg at night. So I did that over and over again because, first of all, I wanted to know, am I dreaming this? Because I've been having these experiences all my life since I was 5, and I always thought they were dreams. I never thought or never realized that they had any correlation or anything to do with the physical world. So I was trying to find out, Am I just having a great lucid dream? But once I did it over and over again, and I wasn't wrong at all in my descriptions of the places that I've been to, I was shocked. I thought, well, oh, my God, this is real. So now what do I do with this? What does it mean that I can do this? What am I and what are we that we can leave our physical body and see these type of things?
Correct.
So I had to start exploring that new avenue, so to speak, because after I became convinced, that no longer was a question in my mind.
I understand that your book, Soul Traveler, is going to be made into a motion picture. Is that correct?
Yes.
Who's doing that? When's it going to be? What's going on?
you know what's funny, really funny, Art? I've done your program, Coast to Coast and Dreamland, and numerous other programs. This was the first time that I'd ever gotten a briefing before coming on the air. this never happened. I was told what I should say and what I should not say, but I will
really?
Say this. There are four major studios looking at Soul Traveler right now. We are negotiating with all of them. Everyone is very enthusiastic. This whole ball of wax, this whole thing, I wrote the screenplay, and I wrote it since the last time I spoke to you and I did your show. And it was because of your show, Art, so I want to thank you for that.
Sure.
While doing Dreamland, I was approached by a movie, I can mention their name, Amber Wave Media on the East Coast. And they're the ones who suggested and were very interested in doing a feature film regarding my book. They wanted me to work with a screenwriter. But after writing this, and it's not just something I've written, it's something I believe and I practice.
I understand.
It's more of a spiritual belief than just, you know, a circus trick.
Sure. No, believe me, I understand.
Right. So I couldn't see just handing this over to some screenwriter who wasn't at least semi-experienced or had some kind of understanding of what this phenomenon was all about. So I set out to learn about screenplays, which is this crazy thing, and I met a few actors and here and there, and it's amazing how many people came out of the woodwork to help me. And next thing I knew, I was plugging through page 50, page 100, and I had written this screenplay based on my book. But what's
smart
so
idea.
Wonderful about this particular movie, it's not going to be just a movie. It's going to be very entertaining. It's going to be funny because if you read my book, you see how, you know, I have a little bit of a wacky sense of humor.
Uh-huh.
So it's going to be funny, but it's going to be very, very educational. And a lot of people, the reviews I've gotten so far, people tell me that it's better than the book.
All right. Hold tight.
Okay.
That probably is right, because you condensed it more efficiently. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from September 5th, 1997. Presents Art Bell's Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired September 5th, 1997.
That is exactly what it is, and I'm Art Bell. Good morning, everybody. It's great to be here. My guest is Albert Taylor. His book is Soul Traveler, and it's going to be soon more than a book. It's going to be a movie. And you can imagine the possibilities. I certainly can. In fact, we're going to talk about the possibilities in a moment.
...1997, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
My guest is Albert Taylor, who has written Soul Traveler, which soon will be a motion picture. And he wrote the screenplay. Good move, I think, Al.
I think so, too.
Now, when it gets, though, to the director and the, you know, the actual stage where they're going to produce the movie,
right.
They're going to want to get...
Hack away at it.
Yeah, they're going to want to hack away at it.
Yeah.
And they're going to want to put in probably all kinds of scenes that you might not want in there.
Oh, I've already heard a bunch of really wild inputs where it almost makes it like a dog and pony show.
Yeah.
I've been kind of rigid in that area because, like I said, it's my belief that we're talking about. And I think, and when you really talk about some of the things that I've experienced, they really are an incredible thing to witness without a lot of hocus pocus. But, yeah, I've already kind of been briefed by some actor friends of mine on the fact that they're going to throw in some stuff and they're going to want to see a lot of, you know, smoke and mirrors and sensationalism, that type of thing.
Mm.
So I'm open. You know, I have to be open. I can't be too rigid.
All right. Well, you described a scene to me a little while ago about being in your home, I think it was, and hearing the shower. And you said you imagined the walls and they disappeared. And you imagined the door and it disappeared.
Right.
And there you were staring at the shower curtain.
Right.
Now, in the movie... they're going to have the shower curtain disappear, and there is going to be a luscious, well-developed blonde behind the shower curtain.
It's supposed to be my son. I wouldn't doubt it.
But in the movie, though...
as long as they don't play the psycho music, you know? Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it. You know, what I did is I did write in some scenes in the screenplay... for the person who was looking for that kind of thing.
You did?
Yeah, there is a little bit in there. And again, it's not nudity or anything like that, but if they're looking for...
let me just ask you straight out. Is it possible to play soul-traveling mischief?
Yes, it is. And it depends on what you mean by mischief.
Well,
if you mean play with someone while they're in their dream state, yes, you can do that.
Well...
if you want to spy on someone,
yes,
you can do that also.
That's mischief. Yes.
But because when you leave the body, you leave behind a lot of things that you're feeling right now, a lot of the animalistic human urges.
All right, that brings me then to Daryl's facts. Let me read this to you and you answer it. Number one, when you are out of body... are you aware of your own individual identity and or are you, in effect, absorbed into some sort of collective consciousness?
Oh, no. Definitely you still feel like an individual because you are an individual's soul, even though you're a spark of something greater. But no, you definitely retain a lot of what you are now. It's just it's the emotional impact of a lot of things that you lose, which is a good thing.
Well, that was part number two. When in this state... can or do you still experience the full spectrum of human emotions?
I wouldn't say the full spectrum, but even Robert talked about this. Things like the sex drive, you still can experience something like that. He talked about it in his first book where he came out of body and it was overwhelming to him.
Well, this is sounding better. So you still...
not completely sterile.
But without a body, how do you experience... sex drive?
Oh, man. All right. We just opened up a can of worms. I have to tell you, Art, one of the things people ask me about, and I have not talked about this on any show, on your show or any other show, and they talk about something that is called astral sex. Have you ever heard the term?
No, but I like the sound of it.
Well, it is something that is very, very real. And you have to think about what we're talking about regarding the feelings and emotions that go along with sex, period. If and I don't even know how I can touch on this. It is possible to have some type of mental sexual experience while out of the physical body.
Well, now I can only relate to this as far as a dream is concerned. Now, I have had dreams about sex. We all have.
Mm-hmm.
And those who, you know, probably say they don't have such things lie,
mm-hmm.
is my opinion. But mm-hmm. In these dreams, even though they're really cool, the act is never consummated, so it's a terrible tease.
Mm-hmm.
You always wake up beforehand.
Some people may not, but go on.
Well, lucky people, I guess. And so when you talk about astral sex,
uh-huh.
which is different, obviously, than the dream state,
mm-hmm.
I guess, I'm not exactly sure how one delineates between what is a dream and what, gee, maybe I did travel somewhere, you know, and had some sort of relationship with the
I would say you probably have.
A
lot of us have, and we don't know what it is exactly. And a lot of us aren't 100% conscious during the experiences. There's varying levels of consciousness. But a lot of us have had these sexual dreams with a stranger even, you know, in the dream, or at least they appear to be a stranger. Now, the thing about it is, when you're in that state, the astral form, or the second body, responds to your thoughts. Meaning, if you think you have hands, you have hands. If you think you have arms, you have arms. If you think you have a torso, legs, feet, whatever, you have that. So, and what we're really talking about here is thought. When a person has a sexual experience, or a person has an orgasm, let's say, what is really going on there? An orgasm is one of
mental.
The few things that a person has a difficult time describing.
Yeah,
yes, everyone's done it.
Well, I've always said I thought most of sex is actually mental.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I believe that.
Very much so.
Okay.
Very much so.
Okay, so then I can imagine the possibility of astral sex.
Mm-hmm.
But here you're going to run into real trouble, because you see, when we discuss out-of-body travel or a near-death experience,
uh-huh.
we talk about the light, and we talk about God, and we talk about the afterlife and all the rest of it,
uh-huh.
and people usually don't imagine there to be sex in the afterlife or in the astral plane.
Right.
But you're saying wrong-o.
Right. Definitely. There is definitely the experience there. Not the physical, whatever, duplicate of the experience, but the sensations and everything else is, I wouldn't say exactly the same. I would say 10 times better.
10 times better?
10 times better. Nothing like the physical. But see, that goes with a lot of the experiences that you have in that state. The emotion of love is 10 times, maybe even 100 times more stronger than it is in the physical body. Your perceptions are finely, finely tuned. So it is far better than anything that you could experience in the physical.
Boy, you are tempting me.
I never usually talk about this, too, but it's something that I've experienced, and it's something that I'm going to put in my second book.
Oh, believe me, it's something the movie guy's going to want in there. Definitely.
Yeah, I think just because I've mentioned it and it's not in the screenplay now, that may have to change.
That's a change, I'm sure. I don't want to get too personal here, but have you actually yourself experienced this astral sexual experience?
I'd say yes.
Otherwise, I mean, how could you really talk about it?
Yeah, I wouldn't even begin to talk about it if it wasn't an experience.
Is it one of the more signs of soul travel?
That I did initially when I first started exploring the out of body travel. It's not something that is of interest now, but it's something that was definitely part of the exploration. To understand what was going on. Even, like I said, Robert Monroe felt an overwhelming feeling, sexual drive, when he was in the out-of-body state, and he had to fight it terribly. and returned to his physical body, and he couldn't understand why he did feel that way.
Hmm.
Now that only that to me that like what can I say? That starts a bunch of questions in my head. That makes me wonder what's the connection? Why is this something that we feel in the physical plane, and why is this something that we experience in a non-physical plane? What is the link? And like I said, because people, when you ask a person, can you describe an orgasm? That is the toughest thing for someone to describe. Yet, 90% of the planet has experienced it. So I'm wondering if truly it is really beyond the physical, and it's almost kind of like getting in contact with who we truly are, kind of a nirvana, so to speak. But I don't know. It's something that I'm speculating on and that I wonder about myself.
Well, I seem to recall I think it was a Star Trek, the way they had sex was they put their fingertips together. And then all the rest of the process was metal, like a Vulcan mind meld, sort of. And the entire sexual experience was mental. The connection was established by physical contact, but the rest was all mental.
Right.
You
have to think about what we really are. And people have sexual experiences and even orgasms during the sleep process. And that's without physically moving of any movement of any sort. So you have to really think about what really is it and what drives it and where does it come from and where is it centered. And I think, through all my understanding and limited research in the area, that it has very, very little to do with the physical. It's definitely, I'd say, 80 to 90% a mental experience.
Well, I always wondered in my limited physical way about an afterlife. How could an afterlife be heaven if there were not women there, if there was no sex there, if they didn't have good beer, if there wasn't radio, all the things that I enjoy and love, if they were gone and all I did was float around on some stupid cloud somewhere.
Playing a harp all day long.
Something like that. could that really be heaven? And the answer to me right now is no.
Right.
So maybe the real answer is no.
Well, the thing that I found out, and I have a feeling that heaven or nirvana or whatever you want to call it, the afterlife, can be, depending on the life that you've led, can be as pleasant as you can imagine it to be. That's why on other shows when we've talked about this, that's why I said what I had to do is when I left the physical body, my biggest challenge was to try to take control of my uncontrolled imagination. Because just the fact that I imagined something, I would begin to experience it. If I imagined there was a ghost or a lion or a tiger near me, I would start creating it out of astral substance. And if I imagined that lion or tiger bit me, I would actually feel the pain. So the thing that I had to do was gain control of my thoughts. Because I believe when you do pass on that you have that capability, and you have the capability almost like being a genie on the astral plane. You have that capability of conjuring up any type of experience that you would like.
There are those, Al, who would say the kinds of things that you are talking about sound not so much godly as they do,
I would say, yeah, probably a few people would. The thing about this, though, is our country is based on a lot of Christian beliefs and dogmas.
Yes.
And somewhere in the past, I don't know for what reason, sex and sexual drive and things like that was pretty much labeled a no-no.
That's right.
It's something that was even, that's why we called it that's nasty thinking or get your mind out of the gutter or all these.
Well, I mean, a priest will, after all, take a vow of chastity.
Right.
So that his spiritual life may be pure.
Right, exactly. But what I think is that it depends on your perception. There's something good about a lot of things, but you can use good things wrongly. You can abuse things. You can be selfish about certain things. I think it, and seeing that God gave this experience to us for some reason, I think depends on what your frame of mind, and if you have a healthy frame of mind regarding this subject and are not out to hurt or manipulate or use or abuse anyone, then I don't think it's as negative or a bad thing or an ungodly-like thing as you might think.
You know, I've got to agree with that myself, but that gets us in trouble with a lot of people.
Yeah, I can. I mean, I don't know. Through this journey that I've been on, Art, I've gotten in trouble a lot.
Yeah, I bet you have.
I've been blasted in the Bible Belt. I've been told I've been possessed by demons and a bunch of other things. And the truth about it is that...
How do you know you're not?
How do I know I'm not?
Right.
Well, I think it has to do with the way I treat people. If I am possessed by demons, I try now more than I ever have in my life to be kind and loving to people. I go out of my way to help people as much as I can. I've traveled pretty much all over the United States and in foreign countries now, and I never, ever cancel a lecture, even if there's only one person there. So if that's something negative, I fail to see it. Because I have touched and I've helped a lot of people all over the place, and that's where I really get my rewards from, is when people tell me thank you because you've helped me with my concepts on death. Or when I was in Crete, one woman lost her son, and I talked to her about the afterlife and how you didn't lose consciousness and how you moved on to another plane, and that comforted her. So I think that what I'm doing is a very, very positive thing. And if people use the word demons as a negative, then I really don't think it has anything to do with what I'm doing.
All right, here is another fact. Please ask Albert if the soul on the astral plane can interact with all the material world. For example, being able to operate a touch-type keyboard.
Now, that's a good question. I have not been able to move physical items. I have practiced and I have tried. I have not been able to do that. I have had reports of people able to move, like Robert Monroe was able to move a dial or a diode or something, a dial and an instrument in another room when they did the clinical experiment with him. I have heard of other people being able to move a little perfume bottle that's on a nightstand or something like that. So I can say this, yes, it is very, very possible to do that, but it is very, very hard to focus your thoughts on the average to be capable of doing that. But I would say it is definitely a possibility. And matter of fact, what I wanted to do, see, I've also, not only did I write the screenplay for the movie, but I've also written three television shows for a possible television series.
Wow.
And what I wanted to do is, you know, if you think about it, how can you keep having a show over and over again without, and just telling basically the kind of experiences I have, you have to have a storyline that progresses. I didn't want it to come to that hocus pocus, so what I did is I looked at the capabilities that a lot of people have reported. I also looked at the Indian gurus or avatars or saints, as we call them, like Sai Baba and Paramahansa Yogananda and the different people like that and some of the things that they were capable of doing. So to me, I think we all are on this progressive path of becoming these spiritually aware individuals, and with that kind of awareness comes certain capabilities. So I use those kind of capabilities that other people have been able to talk about, such as levitating also, and I slowly put that into the storyline where the character, the soul traveler, slowly progresses and is capable of doing some of these things.
All right, back to sleep paralysis, because I've never gone past that point.
Mm-hmm.
Al, how do I get past that point?
That's the toughest hurdle that most people, because when you're at that fork in the road where you can either become so fearful that your heart starts pounding and you become more and more aware of the physical room around you, that draws you back.
Mortal terror is the way I would describe it.
That draws you back into your body faster than anything I could possibly imagine. The best thing that I can say to someone is that what I've done in chapter 14 of my book is I've listed something that's called the interrupted sleep technique. Now, what that does is that interrupts your sleep pattern, where your consciousness and in your physical body gets about 4 hours of sleep initially. but then you interrupt it. Now, the physical body still requires about 4 hours sleep. So what that does is when you go back to bed, the body is so tired, it's a lot harder to interrupt it or to stop it or prevent it from going back to sleep. So that's one of the easier ways, is that it just goes to sleep and you can't do anything about it.
All right. I'm a very interesting case in that regard because I sleep twice a day, usually 4 hours in one shift.
And you should have a lot of experiences.
And then maybe three in the other. Well, I do. I'll tell you about them when we come back. Bottom of the hour, Albert Taylor is my guest. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight, featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from September 5th, 1997. Listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from September 5th, 1997.
Good morning, everybody. Great to be here. My guest is Albert Taylor. His book, Soul Traveler, is soon to be a motion picture coming to a theater near you. And we've got lots to talk about, including how you let yourself go. And we'll get to that in a moment. By the way, for those of you who got your feathers in a bunch because I had Mark Furman on the air last night, I say tough. I have guests on and let them say what they want to say and let you make up your own mind. I also had somebody on from the Nation of Islam. That got a lot of other feathers in a bunch. So, I don't know. I'm going to just keep doing what I do. And if somebody's interesting to interview, I'm going to interview them. If you can't handle the content, then handle the knob that says off. That's your option. Personally, I think that when you have somebody on the radio and you come at them as though they are your enemy, you never hear their message. So I don't do that. And I'm not going to do that. And so when I had the man on from the Nation of Islam, everybody came at me and said, you're a racist. Coming from one direction. When I had Mark Furman on last night, they said, you're a racist, coming from another direction. Well, my way of doing things is to just continue to move ahead and interview interesting people as I find them.
On Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from September 5th, 1997.
Okay, now back to Albert Taylor. Albert, I sleep in two shifts. It's really weird.
Mm-hmm.
When I get off the air at 3 o'clock Pacific time, 3 o'clock in the morning, the adrenaline's pumping away, and I generally don't get to sleep until about 5 or 5:30.
Mm-hmm.
I then sleep for about 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
I get up, I do a whole lot of business, you know, during the day, whatever is going on, And by late in the day, typically 5 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I go to sleep again, maybe just for 2 or 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's when you have experiences, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's the other way around. Sometimes the morning sleep will be somewhat disturbed,
mm-hmm.
and I'll have the experiences then. Other times, and more times than not, it's in the afternoon.
Right, right.
And I have not yet been able to let go. Now, there, I can envision two ways that I can let go. One is, you can explain to me how I can do it on my own,
mm-hmm.
or two, I could have you come and soul nap me.
Yeah, well, I get so many requests, I think I'm going to create an astral bus. I'm just going to pull up and blow the horn.
All aboard.
Well, the only thing I can say is I'm not sure what holds you in. Is it fear? Is it excitement? What?
It's fear.
Or all of the above.
No,
fear.
It's fear.
Okay, then you really have to talk to yourself on this one and ask yourself, what are you really afraid of? And examine it, because what you'll do is you'll find that you really are afraid of the unknown. You haven't identified anything. You have nothing to really be afraid of, except that you don't know what's going to happen.
All right, well, being paralyzed is a very frightening...
Oh, yeah.
Disorienting...
Yes.
Experience, one from which you tend to want to extricate yourself very quickly because you're not in control, and, you know, it's like there's something on the other side that's scary, and you want to snap back to this time, this
right.
consciousness.
Right, right.
So you tell
and it
me.
And it feels very discomforting.
Yes.
You feel like you can't breathe. You
yes.
feel like something's waiting on your chest, or
that's,
like you're going to die.
That's right.
Yeah, and I... You know, I think, and I don't know this for sure, but I think maybe God designed it so that not everyone does step through that Stargate, so to speak. And Stargate's on, so I'm really thinking about that. But maybe it's designed that you get to that point where you feel all these emotions and you go back. Because maybe not all of us, I don't know for sure, are ready for that type of experience. So that kind of keeps you from having something that may blow you, your mind or blow you away. I don't know. All I know is that it took me a long time to overcome that. But sometimes, it just depends on how fast that disconnection process happens. If it happens real slow, that's agonizing. If it takes a long time and you're in the paralysis for a long time, and that is terrible. But sometimes it happens so fast, next thing I know, matter of fact, I wasn't even aware that I was disconnected. I just started rising above the body. So it all depends. Now, the thing that you do regarding your sleep pattern is ideal for having an out-of-body experience. That's the perfect thing. 4 hours sleep,
yes.
Wake up, do something. If you don't eat when you wake up the first time, that's even better, because that saves that energy that your body's going to use for processing food for leaving the body. So try that next time. Don't eat. Drink water or whatever, but don't eat. The thing that I say, if you do that all the time, Art, you're very fortunate, because most people have to sleep 8 hours and get up and go to work, and they can't do what you do. But if you really want to do this, take advantage of the situation and just keep doing it over and over again, where you become complacent and you become more relaxed with it when you realize nothing has happened to you negative. That is negative. And the more comfortable you feel about it, the easier it's going to be for you to actually transition beyond the physical body.
Is it, for example, I have flying dreams,
mm-hmm.
and I love them. Is it possible in soul travel to essentially fly?
Yes. Oh, definitely. That's the biggest part of all of it, is flying around mm-hmm. and seeing things that you never would imagine.
There seem to be limitations with what we understand with regard to the speed of light,
mm-hmm.
and travel to any place significant. Yeah, we can get to the moon, and we might eventually get to Mars. That'll
right.
be a strain. But going any farther, really rough.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have frequently thought that one manner of space travel might be your discipline of soul travel.
Mm-hmm.
True?
Yes, that is definitely an avenue.
Have you traveled to other planets?
I have been as far as the moon.
The moon?
Yes, I have been as far as the moon. I have not traveled beyond that, even though I could. But I do know people who have gone to the stars.
I remember Shirley MacLaine's Out on a Limb book and then movie.
Mm-hmm.
And she traveled to, I believe, to the moon.
Yes. And I think a little beyond, yeah.
Yeah, and there was attached between her and her body, ever so thin, this long plasma.
Silver cord,
yeah.
Right.
Was that also your experience?
Well, the silver cord is something that has baffled me for a while, because in a lot of metaphysical or let's say esoteric teachings, they talk about the silver cord. But I have looked for mine, I mean extensively, looked around, flipped around, whatever, and I have not been able to locate one. Plus, the silver cord is alleged to be attached from the physical body to the astral body.
Exactly.
Now, I have, and when you achieve higher states of awareness or vibrational states, I've had to slip or leave the astral body behind. And there was no silver cord connected to my etheric body or light body. So I have not seen it, but I do kind of have a theory about it.
Okay.
My theory is, and I may be off on this one, but this is my theory on it, is that it's kind of like the silver cord is kind of like leaving breadcrumbs. So, you know, kind of, you can kind of follow it on back and find your body if that's what you're worried about, because you really don't have to worry about that at all. But I think there may be a part of your consciousness that may provide it or produce it.
Ah, so in other words, those who have really achieved the loss of fear about this may not need the breadcrumbs.
Right, right. And because Robert Monroe never mentioned anything about a silver cord, I have really looked for mine because I thought that's where there really was one. Now, I'm not saying that there isn't. I'm saying that I have not been able to experience it, and I have tried numerous times.
So we should not necessarily expect one, because, I mean, if I were to get up there a long way and look down and not see a cord, I'd go, oh, no.
Yeah, how do I get back?
That's right. And the way you get back is?
All you have to do is think about what it's like to be in your physical body. You know what it's like to be in your body more than anyone else. Or you can even, you know, what's interesting about traveling out of body is a lot of your experiences respond to your commands. Like, I want to fly higher. I want to fly faster. I want to return to my body. So it's pretty much as simple as that. Sometimes, if you're very fearful while being out of body, that will act as an automatic recall.
What about if you decide it's really cool out here, I'm not going back?
Well, you can try that, and you can try to stay out as long as you want, but...
Not me. I'm asking you.
I've tried that because I was having such a great experience, I didn't want to come back right away. But because of a divine organization and divine plan, the body has a capability or whatever to recall the astral or spirit consciousness. So what happens is while you're out, let's say out at the moon, or beyond the stars,
right,
you start becoming more and more aware of what's going on in the physical room and in your body than you are of where you are, where your consciousness is. And you start feeling like you're being drawn or pulled.
Yes.
And eventually, you can't hold on any longer, and there may be an incredible acceleration, extreme visual blur, where you can't make anything out because you're traveling so fast, and you may end up feeling like as if you're slammed or dropped into your body. But you can't, I mean, you can only stay out so long. So you really don't have to worry about getting lost. You don't have to worry about staying out so long that your body dies or that you die or lose your way back, because no matter if you want to or not, you're going to be recalled back.
Do you think that if you began to have some severe physical distress during your out-of-body experience, in other words, your body began to experience, you know, whatever,
mm-hmm,
that would pull you back?
Oh, definitely. First of all, It's not like you stepped out of a pair of old coveralls and you're down the street and you have zero sensation of what's going on with the coveralls. It's not like that at all.
Right.
You very much are still in tune and connected with what's going on with the body. And if you're really good at it, a lot of people, the last time I was on your show, a lady described it as being in two places at the same time. If you're really good at it, you can have your consciousness, which is projected to one location, and you can switch back and forth to the location where your physical body is. So you're not really disconnected. If someone comes into the room and touches you for any reason, you will be back instantly. And if they come into the room and are just milling around the room, your consciousness may not be in the room, but you will be very aware of that. You know, to me, this is what's wonderful about it, is that, first of all, gravity and the physical plane does not dictate to the physical, to the spirit in any shape or form. So it is very, very natural for the spirit or astral form, whatever you want to call it, to be able to fly above the ground and to do things that you wouldn't normally think of. But to me, this is what's wonderful, and I ask people this all the time. Don't you think it's strange that here you are, a human who has never flown in his physical life at all, but yet when you have a dream that you're flying, it feels very natural? That is something very, very peculiar if you think about it.
Do you ever crash?
I have gone through the ground.
Oh,
yeah. I have gone into caves and mountains, and the cave ended, and I had to pass through the wall of the cave to exit on the other side. In the early days, when I would fly over, like say, leap off of a building and try to fly to the next building top, while flying, I would think, oh God, I hope I don't fall.
Yep.
And with that very thought, I have plummeted to the earth. But never have I been injured. I have hit the ground. They say if you hit the ground, you die. Well, I have hit the ground.
That's worrisome.
I have across the ground. I have bounced off the ground. I have gone through the ground.
That's like a Roadrunner cartoon, you know, where they go zooming off the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
They look down. Their feet do about 1,000,000 miles an hour. They realize they're out there in the middle of nowhere. Then they fall.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Kind of like that, huh?
Yeah, well, the thing is, the reason that you transition from the physical body to any kind of reality, be it a physical or a non-physical reality, is because of your thoughts, of focusing your thoughts. So when you say, or the thought pops into your head, I hope I don't fall, the experience responds to that thought. So, and I think that's kind of like, that gives you a clue as to what we really are. Here we are, all we have to do is focus our thoughts, and we're capable of experiencing these incredible things in the body and out of the body. One of the things that I thought was a hoax is the capability of bending metal objects, like the great Kreskin, remember him?
Oh, yes.
I used to think that was a hoax back then. I thought, oh, yeah, he hired a bunch of people out in the audience to have bent keys in their pockets. But after I started exploring this particular thing, because once you get into this, you'd be surprised how many other avenues and books open up. But once I started exploring it, I went to one of these sessions. It's called a PK party, for psychokinetic energy party. And during that party, there were about 30 of us who had spoons in our hands.
Mm.
And the person went through the guidelines of how to do it, and eventually we were to attempt to bend these spoons. Now, the friend of mine that I was with actually bent their spoon. I didn't bend my spoon because I was too busy looking at everyone else. But my friend bent the spoon, and I was shocked at that because I knew this person. If it had been anyone else, I would have thought it was probably part of the gimmick. But I asked this person, I said, wait a minute, I know you. How did you do that?
And
the person replied to me, I just believed that I could.
Well, I don't dismiss that at all. I've interviewed a number of very legitimate scientists, including Dr. Holland from Para Inc., who did a lot of the work at Princeton. And it would appear as though this sort of thing is absolutely possible.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely possible. He talked a little bit about spoon bending.
Mm-hmm.
And he hedged a little bit, suggesting that some of it is hoax. But he said, I did it myself, and it wasn't.
Right. So it convinced me.
It apparently is possible.
It is very, very possible. Matter of fact, the first time that I tried it after I started really thinking, well, my friend said they just believe, so I realized that my thoughts and my doubts, I had to dismiss all of those, and I had to forget about, luckily no one was there except for my dog. I had to think about, I'm just going to do this because I believe that I can. The first time that I attempted, I carry the spoon around with me still. Not only did I bend the spoon, but I bent it in a curlicue.
Oh,
so I was totally amazed that I could do this. But then the question popped into my head, who am I or what am I or what are we that we can affect physical objects such as metal with our minds? And that's what I'm talking about, what we're on our path and what we each of us are evolving into.
Now, were you holding the spoon when
yes.
you did it?
Yes.
Were you rubbing the spoon?
No. I put my thumb on the spoon and held it in one hand, and I placed two fingers on the bowl. And the thing that you do is you visualize energy coming down through the top of your head.
Yes.
And you visualize that energy slowly moving down through your shoulder and down your arm through your elbow and your forearm and into the spoon itself.
How do you know, though, that you're not psychologically suggesting to yourself so strongly that spoon will bend, that you are not putting the pressure necessary to bend the spoon?
Great question. What I did after that is I tried to bend another spoon the same identical way that I bent this one, just by brute force.
Yes.
And it fractured and showed stress marks that the other spoon, the spoon that I warm formed, because that's what it's called, warm forming.
Right.
I warm formed, it bent like it was melted, like it was soft, and then it re-solidified. So the difference between the two of them was dramatic.
Hmm.
Dramatic. One was fractured and fatigued in a lot of different areas and showed stress and cracks. The other one was not at all. It melted and it bent in a curl.
All right. With regard to soul travel, when we come back after the top of the hour, I want to ask you about a couple of things. One, because of the limitations of light speed, we really can't go visit other places. Does soul travel enable one to beat the speed of light?
Yes, because light speed only applies to the physical plane.
How about time travel?
Definitely.
All right. Those are two areas, then, that we are going to tackle when we come back, which will be in a moment. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from September 5th, 1997.
Got a black magic woman. Got a black magic woman. I've got a black magic woman. Got me so black I can't see.
Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from September 5th, 1997.
Would you like to soar? Would you like to fly? Would you like to be able to, without fear, leave your body and travel on the astral plane? My guest is Albert Taylor, and his book is Soul Traveler. It's going to be a movie, maybe a TV series as well. And he claims, and so do many, many other people, that it's absolutely possible. It begins as a kind of paralysis when you're near sleep or in sleep or in a state of sleep or near it. A kind of paralysis. Many, many, many of you have had that. I've had it many times. Never have I been able to ever let go and go soaring. But, oh, I would like to. I sure would like to. And we've been discussing some pretty intriguing aspects of soul travel this morning, not the least of which is sex. Sex on the astral plane? Heresy, you say? Apparently not. I'm kind of glad to hear that. We'll get back to Albert Taylor in a moment.
...1997, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Remember, folks, there are no sexual harassment lawsuits on the astral plane. Right, Al?
Right.
Before we leave this subject entirely, I've got a fax here, I guess generated by our conversation, that I find interesting. Dear Art and Al, I have had astral sex, just as your guest has described. Mm-hmm. I've had less than 6 astral travel experiences. Like you explain, it is so very hard and difficult to let go. So that's why I have so few travels. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I wanted to travel out to the universe of stars. Mm-hmm. I found myself instead walking on a sidewalk street scene with adobe homes. And upon meeting 2 pretty ladies walking in my direction, I had an impulse of having sex with one of them. So obviously he limits himself. An attraction, he says. And as we met, we literally mingled together and had this, and the sexual orgasm was very sensational and electrifying, thereafter making sex on Earth very localized and much less satisfying.
Right.
Really?
Yes.
I have only shared this with a few people because it is so bizarre trying to explain it. Your guest does know what he's talking about.
Yeah. It's something that I don't talk about a lot either because it's such a strange thing. And like we said before, because a lot of people have different hang-ups regarding sex. And they don't necessarily think that it's neutral. They think it's negative if you have a sexual thought or fantasy or experience. So I normally don't talk about it either. But yes, it is, like I said, can be 10 times more satisfying or incredible or intense than the physical.
Well, but is that good? In other words, is it good in the sense that you've got to come back down to Earth sometime, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Old phrase, and when you are back, if the real thing, the physical thing, is less than the astral thing, is that good?
Well, I wouldn't say it's good, and I wouldn't say it's bad. It's kind of like this, all right, when you leave the physical body, people who've had near-death experiences
right.
have had kind of a euphoria, a nirvana, where this is where I'm really from. The
right.
Earth is just a very temporary thing and just a school.
Right.
So having that experience, which makes you understand yourself 100-fold and is a wonderful experience, then all of a sudden you come back to the physical body. Well, yes, it is tougher because that experience is far better and far more pleasurable than being in the physical body. But it also educates you and makes you more aware that you are something far more than the physical body. I would say if you became obsessed with it, yes, I would say that would be negative. But if you just enjoyed the experience for what it is, one-time thing, then you'd be okay.
All things in moderation. All right. Now, what about travel in time? This has long been one of my favorite subjects.
Mm-hmm.
And again, though a lot of theoretical physicists believe that time travel is possible, they look at it from a machine point of view. What would we have to build to achieve it?
Right.
To literally bend time.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, yeah, it probably can be done, but not with the amount of power we have on Earth right now. So, mm-hmm. what about What about soul travel?
Well, it is more than possible. It is something, that's something that I can talk about because I have experienced it. But I don't give a lot of warnings regarding astral projection, soul travel, out-of-body experiences, whatever you want to call it.
Yes.
I don't give a lot of warnings, but one of the warnings that I do give is about time travel. Because what we're talking about, whether you believe it or not, what we're talking about, the capability of your consciousness or soul leaving the body is a very real thing. It is not your imagination. You really are capable of doing this.
Okay.
Time is an element of the physical world only. When you're in that state, you are capable of not only transitioning time to the past, but actually going into the future.
Okay.
Sometimes, and through my experience, because I'm a researcher, you know, I'm an engineer scientist, that's what I do. I wanted to experiment with time. So I've experienced and witnessed some of past lives that I never even knew existed, but I wanted to go into the future. When I did do that, I saw something in my own future that I didn't particularly care for. And some people say, well, time, things can be changed, right? You know, time is not, the future is not set in stone.
Yes.
Well, that's true. The future is probable, but because we are going through this life guided, it is not unguided. There are certain things that are structured to happen in individuals and in our individual lives because those things are structured to teach us lessons and to help us evolve.
All right.
Things are going to happen.
All right. Now, you warned people about time travel, and so I want to follow up on that before we leave it. What is the danger?
Okay, well, you know, I've said
you,
this
you
before.
Saw...
Some people think that they'll go into the future and they'll see what's happening in the future on a global scale, maybe.
Yes, yes. But instead, you saw something in your future life that you weren't so wild about.
Exactly.
What was it?
And what was it?
Mm.
It was a major radical change in my marital status and my future regarding my family and things like that.
Oh.
It was, and yeah, and see, when I saw that, first of all, I didn't want to believe it. And when I came back, it affected me so much that people were asking me in my conscious waking state, "What's wrong with you? How come why are you so down? What's the problem?" And how do you tell somebody, I saw my future and I didn't like it? I couldn't do that at all.
How long ago was that, Al?
How long ago?
Yep.
I'd say maybe about 2 years ago.
2 years ago?
Yeah, about 2 years ago.
Has there been such a drastic change?
Oh, major, major. My life 2 years ago is nothing like my life now. I'm single now, even though I wrote about my marriage in my book. But the thing that I noticed, see, and people said, well, why couldn't you just change it and avoid it from happening?
Yes.
And I said, well, I tried. But the thing that I found out is it had very little to do with me. It was part of another soul's experience. And this soul that I was involved with, it was part of their experience. So this had to happen for this particular soul to evolve. I just happened to be involved in that too. So it did have major impact on me, and because I watched the little telltale signs of it manifest. And when I'd see something, I'd go, oh, no, I have to do something about that. And I'd try to avoid it.
Sure.
And then something else would happen to solidify the direction that it was going. And I have to tell you, there was nothing I could do.
Have you ever wondered, Al, if it was not a self-fulfilling prophecy?
I thought about that, but because I did so much to try to avoid it, I mean proactive, that it still transpired.
Mm.
So... all I can say, and it's a risk. If anyone is going to attempt it, I don't say don't do it. I'm saying be advised that if you do this, you could possibly see something in your future that may have to transpire, and you may have to come back and deal with it.
Mm.
So that was a tough cookie to swallow for me. I mean, I'm past it now, but I can tell you the experience while I was in it was not fun.
Did you intentionally try to observe your own life?
Yes, I did. Because I wanted to, that's part of, like, I want to see what the lotto numbers are. There's a part of me that was very, very earthbound in thinking.
Oh, yes. While we're on that subject, you know my two lost packages with UPS? Bless their hearts. I mean, are there practical applications to soul travel? For example, I have two packages I desperately want, and UPS has one in Las Vegas where they've been storing it for me instead of shipping it, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
And the other they can't find at all.
Mm-hmm.
Now, could a person, painful as it might be, no doubt with the backlog they have, search through their boxes and find specific boxes?
Oh, yes.
And call them up and say, look, dummy, go over to corner L4, and at the bottom of the pile somewhere, you'll find my box.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Really?
I've had people find lost keys. Yeah, definitely. You could do a lot of things. But, you know, and you don't have to travel out of body to do these things. And all you have to do is, right before, I'm not saying this 100%, but these are the places, the people who've tried this and have had positive results, is right before going to sleep, request, I'd like to know what the answer to a particular problem or where a particular item is.
Okay.
And these people that have done this, and I have, is you wake up in the morning with an idea of where this thing is, or you wake up in the morning with a problem that you've been milling over all for days, instantly solved, and you wonder how come you didn't think of it before.
Yeah.
So definitely you can do that. And definitely one woman went to bed one night. She lost her car keys several days before, was using a spare, and the night before she went to bed, she said, I'd like to find my car keys. Please show me where they are. So that night she had a dream of the keys being in a vase by her door, a little vase, cause, you know, by her door. So that morning she gets up with the dream fresh in her head, jumps up and runs to the vase, pulls all the things out of the vase, pours it out, and her keys fall out of the vase. So it's definitely, you're definitely capable of doing that. That and a lot more.
Could you find my boxes for me?
I could find your boxes if I had an emotional attachment to your boxes.
Only I can have an emotional attachment to a radio.
That's it.
All right.
If you were sending me something, I'd have a better chance.
I understand. All right. Here's somebody else. This topic hits home. I thought I was the only one. When I leave my body, I feel alone sometimes. I'm out of control. And I just bounce off the walls. Once I leave the body, I'm okay. And then I'm not scared anymore. But still very alone. Have you ever heard that before?
Yes. And that possibly may be an illusion of being alone. Because in all actuality, you are not alone. Really, you always have one or more entities around you at all times, but you can't always perceive them. So, yes, I have felt drastically alone at times, but what I have to remember is that any thoughts and emotions that I have can be amplified tenfold. So just a fear thought, you feel 10 times as fearful.
Yeah.
When you're having the experience versus when you would have, think about it in the physical. If you feel alone or think that you are, you're going to feel 10 times as much alone as you would if in any other condition.
All right, here's Bob in Como Country. Brace yourself. This is going to be a rough one.
All right.
First, he asks a pretty good question. He says, what about people who have been attacked in their sleep sexually?
Like incubus.
Well, yeah, there was a movie done.
Entity, like the entity.
Yep, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Like Carlotta Moran.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something entirely different than astral sex?
I hope so.
I
would say, yes, it is something different. I have, you know, I've read the book Entity. I was fascinated by it because I wanted to understand what that was,
right.
What was going on.
Sure.
I don't believe that it was someone who was out of body. I don't know if it was because they took pictures, because there was physical evidence, there was bite marks on Carlotta in places that she just could not bite herself between
right.
her shoulder blades, things like that.
Sure.
That tells me that it is far more possibly than a mental condition or mental illness. She was having experiences that they just could not explain. Plus,
right.
I believe they did an experiment in the gym, and there was some damage or something that happened to a structure in the gym during the experiment. So I don't know what that thing was. I have not run into that kind of energy source or form.
But you've never experienced that, nor
no,
would it be possible.
I don't think it was an astral traveler.
Okay.
But I do think that something happened to Carlotta, and something has happened to other people who've talked about it.
Does astral sex have to be consensual?
Meaning with someone who's out of body?
Uh-huh.
You know, it's not like you're forcing yourself on someone. It's more like, and this may sound real superficial, but it's really kind of like this. It's kind of like shaking a person's hand. That's how casual it can be, meaning that you reach out and you embrace someone.
Mm.
Because it's a thing that is very shared. It's a shared thing.
All right, Bob goes on. Mm-hmm. This guy, meaning you, sounds like an ungodly predator. I think this guy is a space cadet. All of it is in his mind. Yes, even sex can be a mind-enhanced affair. Does he think God is responsible for his enhancements? I think not. Who then is in control here?
Who is in control here?
Yep.
I don't know. You know, I don't take away God's responsibility for anything. I don't know if God has put this experience in my life to help me to evolve. I wouldn't say that I'm in control of everything, because I do definitely believe that God is, and my guides, because that's who I have encounters with a lot, or guardian angels or whatever you want to call them. I believe that they have been directing me a lot. Regarding these experiences, that has to do with what I think we are. First of all, we have free will. Every religious belief practically believes that we do have free will, and we do. We would not be able to learn if we did not, if we were just regimented, and we'd be like racing cars in a slot. We wouldn't be able to pass, turn, or do things on our own to improve our situation. So I believe because of our free will, and because of what we truly are, in my case, I believe that we are all going to be co-creators with God, not God, but co-creators. I believe that we're all evolving to that state. So evolving to that state with free will, of course, you're going to have capabilities of doing things on your own. And I believe that's kind of what it is. Now, whether you choose to do something negative or positive is a matter of free will. Now, I choose to have a positive perception on what I'm talking about. I don't focus on the negative, and I don't do anything to harm anyone, because that is totally against what I believe in.
But it is possible.
I would not say it is not possible. Yes, it is possible because of free will.
So then, how many bad things that have occurred to people might be the result of astral mischief?
You want me to quantify it? I can't add a number to that. I can only give you my belief and understanding about it, and give you my ideals. And my ideals, I would say, if any, very little, if none at all. That's how I feel about it. Most of the people that I have met, and I've met hundreds of people, I mean, people in the States and out of the States who are having these, and most of them seem to have some kind of spiritual foundation or understanding of what this thing is all about, and that it's not to be abused.
Well, you have a lot more faith in humanity than I do.
Well, this goes beyond humanity, because like I said, when you leave the body, you do think and feel a lot differently than you do while in the body. Things like, for instance, I have had some disputes with people while in the physical body that I would normally not go around them at all, because I felt repelled by them. But in the astral form or out of body, those feelings no longer mattered. I no longer felt resentment or any type of irritation because of the person. Matter of fact, I felt just the opposite. So you think very, very differently, and that has to do with what we really are. When you leave the body, you're more in a soul state of consciousness rather than a human state.
Want to know about soul travel? Well, this is the show you want to listen to. Stay right where you are.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight, featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from September 5th, 1997.
With the deck of 51, smoking cigarettes and watching Captain Kangaroo. Now don't tell me I've nothing to do. Last night I dressed in tail, pretended I was on the town. As long as I can dream, it's hard to slow the swinger down. So please don't give a thought to me, I'm really doing fine. You can always find me here.
Premier Radio Networks presents Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired September 5th, 1997.
Sometimes I just can't resist. Good morning, everybody. I'm Art Bell, and my guest is Albert Taylor, whose book is called Soul Traveler, soon to be a movie or a TV show, maybe even both, who knows. One can imagine nearly infinite possibilities. Not a misuse of that word. Anyway, it's going to be an interesting morning. Stay put.
The Coast AM with George Norrie.
The threat of terrorism is going to be looming over us for a long, long time, I'm afraid. Do you think the globalists think they've won or they're winning?
Everybody feels it. We are fast on the road to becoming a police state. The choice that we face is freedom or control. And that's where I see millions of people around this country taking a very firm stand on the side of freedom.
Now we take you back to the night of September 5th, 1997, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Back now to Albert Taylor. Once you get them started, it's hard to get them stopped, I guess. The question is this. Is sex on the astral plane a new form of the Mile High Club?
That's the first. I've never heard that.
You don't have to answer that. I wouldn't answer that.
I'd like to.
Really? Go ahead.
It could be, but most travels on the astral plane aren't high-altitude travels. How's that?
We actually don't know where altitude-wise the astral plane is. In fact, it really can't be thought of as an altitude, can it?
Right, exactly. We have no idea.
All right, let me ask you a real serious question.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, our mutual friend Danion Brinkley is in the hospital,
mm-hmm.
Suffered an aneurysm. I know for a fact now that though he is somewhat stabilized, he's bleeding from both sides of his brain. And he's facing an operation, I believe, possibly even as early as later today. Is there an aspect to soul travel that can be used for healing and good, just as people would use prayer?
Yes, definitely. The thing is, what we're still talking about is what are we? And like I said, we're evolving to something, and we have capabilities. Just like we have capabilities of we're capable of affecting metal surfaces or metal spoons, we are also capable of affecting things on a cellular level. Me, for instance, in my book, I don't harp on this a lot because I don't want to sound like this is a miracle cure for everything.
Right.
But 5 to 6 years ago, I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. And I had 2 major severe attacks that landed me in the hospital. My doctor told me, I'm sorry, the prognosis doesn't look good. It looks like eventually you're going to end up in a wheelchair. I refused to accept that. I thought, there has to be something going on. I decided that maybe I was on the wrong path in life, and maybe that's why this thing was manifesting. So while out of the physical body, I thought about looking back at my physical body, I thought about healing the physical body.
Mm-hmm.
And I must say, and it didn't take long at all, because over a matter of maybe 2 or 3 weeks, all of the symptoms and all of the damage that I had incurred to my occipital lobe, primary occipital lobe, which is in the back of the head, began to either it diminished or it totally receded completely and disappeared. And here it is, 6 years later, I have not had any repeat attacks whatsoever. I have regained all my physical functions, my eye cape. I had extreme eye jitter, double vision, things like that, and I have absolutely zero symptoms and zero remnants of that of that debilitating disease.
Okay, let me tell you a little story about Daniel.
Sure.
When he knew what was occurring to him the other day, he called his cousin. His cousin took him to the hospital. His cousin told me that on the way to the hospital, Daniel didn't say two words to him. Daniel knew what was occurring, and he was already going into a sort of meditative state,
mm-hmm.
and that this has occurred with him many times before, not this specific thing, but many close-to-death things. And he goes to work on himself. He literally heals himself.
Mm-hmm.
And for that reason, he's got no visitors, doesn't want people to come to the hospital, and all the rest of it. He is, as a matter of fact, he was in intensive care in the regular ward. People around him were dying. He said, it prevented me from doing the kind of concentration I wanted. He demanded a room, a private room in intensive care, and got it,
mm-hmm.
where he is in a deep meditative state working on himself.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if it's related to exactly what you've been talking about.
I would not doubt it. Daniel being very, very rooted in what we've just been talking about would have a in-depth understanding of this capability of spirit. Daniel has said many, many times, I echo his thoughts, we're a powerful spiritual being.
Yep.
You've probably heard him say that.
A million
and
times,
and when he
yes.
says that, I'm not just talking about in your beliefs and understandings. I'm talking about, and he is too, in your capabilities.
Albert,
mm-hmm.
We talked about time travel, and you gave warnings with respect to travel in the future, and that makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
But how about travel into the past?
Well, I think that, you know, I think if anyone were going to experiment with time, that would be a definite way I would go. Because first of all, 6 years ago, I never believed in anything like reincarnation. I never believed that we did come here to this planet more than once. That is an excellent way of finding out more about yourself and finding out what you're doing here in this particular life, because all of our past lives equal what we're doing here in this particular life. So I definitely would recommend it.
So there is not as much danger in travel into the past.
I would say no, because first of all, when you go into the past, if there are some things that maybe you should not know, because I'm not saying you have access to everything. If there are some things that you should not know, whether they be in the past or the future.
I mean, you might go into the past and find out you were adopted.
Yeah, you could do that. You could do that. But if there's something that you should not know because it will interrupt the path that you're on.
Yes.
And it will affect the lessons that you came here to learn.
Yes.
Your guides will stop you from remembering it. They have a lot to do with our memories and our capability to recall our experience.
Who are these guides?
Who are these guides?
Yes.
Well, let's say they are guardian angels. Let's say they are beings that have been assigned to us to help guide us through life. Because it would be very, very difficult going through daily life without some kind of spiritual guidance or help. In another case, this is something that Daniel and I talked about, but I don't really talk to a lot of people about this,
mm-hmm.
because this is something that if you're an experiencer, you understand it, but if you're not, it sounds like the guy's nuts. And I don't want to, heaven forbid, I would want to take the risk of sounding
insane. With all we've covered this morning, you have no risk in this area. Go right ahead.
But what I have, and this is what's in the movie now, and it's not in the book. What I did is I answered a lot of questions that I left open in the book because I didn't know the answers at that time.
Okay.
But it's in the movie, and it's also going to be in my new book, Soul Traveler 2, The Meaning of Life. And what it is my numerous encounters with my higher self. And I'm not talking about something that's out there that I have this mental link with, and that's about it. I'm talking about really encountering a being that is you in a way, but is a lot more than you. And it's not about I had to be convinced that it was me. I knew it beyond a shadow of a doubt. So that's something else that I have found that is around me, and a lot of people may have found a similar thing. Danyon did, because he was the first person that I ever asked about this. And I had to say, Danyon, when you have these experiences, I've never heard you say it on the radio, but did you find yourself, a higher aspect of yourself? And he said yes.
All right, I'm going to turn you over to the masses. Are you ready?
Uh-huh.
All right, here they come. First time caller line, you're on the air with Albert Taylor. Hello.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
Keith in Las Vegas.
Hi, Keith.
The first time that I heard Albert, I was kind of doing things around the house and half heard it and half didn't. And when I went to bed, I decided that, well, at least I'd try to remember my dreams this night. And I got up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom and went back to bed. And as I laid back down and went back to sleep, what I thought I was going back to sleep, I reinforced the idea to remember my dreams. And I heard a female voice, not audibly, but in my mind, just as clear as a bell, say, it's natural to levitate up.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I just relaxed and went with it. I thought, okay. And got just an incredible body rush, kind of like an elevator feeling in your stomach when you're a kid, but just throughout my entire body.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
After that, I got a vibration that it wasn't a buzz in my body. It was like waves of vibration going from my head to my feet.
Right, an oscillation.
Right, exactly. Right. And I thought, and at that point, I was like Art says, I was so scared that if I went with this anymore, if I continued to relax and go with this, I'd just be shooting through space.
Mm-hmm.
and startled myself back to the physical, right?
That is, yeah. Well, it's
and
me.
I'm wondering, did I make? Did I think
you were there at the doorstep, like numerous people have been. I think it's wonderful, Keith. I really do. Because what you're doing is you're reconfirming to me why I'm even doing this. Because I'm only doing this to help other people understand that they have the capability to do it themselves.
Right.
So you listen, and then you had this experience. Was that your first time?
Absolutely. Prior to
that's
that,
wonderful.
I had no experience even similar to that. It was
that's
so
wonderful.
Real, and so, it was incredible.
That's wonderful. And see, when you have that type of experience, you can't help but look at yourself a little differently than you did before you had it, right?
Absolutely. No,
that's wonderful.
I tried it again, and I haven't been able to do it again, and I'm not sure why. But
Well, don't give up.
The changing in the sleep habits, the waking up, and I never wake up in the middle of the night,
mm-hmm.
but that particular night I did, and
that seems to be the key. That works with more people than not, and I'm really fortunate. I feel very fortunate that I stumbled upon it because I've had a chance to not only experiment on myself, but I've experimented with hundreds of my students, and there is a great percentage, about 60% or so, of my students who have tried it exactly like I laid it out, who have had these experiences.
All right, here's what you do. Before you go to bed, you drink three giant glasses of water.
and I think you have something there.
Well, the full bladder will call you back from an out-of-body experience, so be careful.
Oh, really?
Okay. Well, thank you, gentlemen.
Yes, thank you very much for the call. Yes, but that's a way of waking up, though.
Yes.
Isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, you're going to be called not back to the body, but into the other room.
Right.
And so you are going to wake up in the middle of your sleep pattern.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Wild
that
card
is
line.
One way.
Yeah, wild card line, you're on the air with Albert Taylor. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
First time caller.
Okay, where are you?
I'm from San Bernardino, California. My name is Dwight.
Hello, Lloyd.
No, Dwight.
Dwight. Hello, Dwight.
Yeah, Art, are you recovering?
From what?
Alcohol and drugs.
No.
No?
No.
Oh, I thought you were in a program.
No, why would you say that?
Well, I'm in AA, and
yes.
I just thought maybe you were.
Why?
Well, I just had this funny thing that you were.
No.
Okay.
No, I barely drink at all. I drink a little wine, that's about it.
Yeah. Well, I'm really afraid of this.
I understand that.
I understand your fear also.
Yeah, I'm really afraid of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it goes against my religious beliefs and everything.
Oh, why?
Why?
Uh-huh.
Because I don't think the Holy Spirit wants this.
In other words, you don't think the Spirit ought to be leaving the body until...
No, absolutely not.
Until it's time.
No.
Well, there is that. Albert, how do you answer that? In other words... The spirit is not meant to be separated from the physical body in the religious, from a lot of religious points of view,
right.
Until you die, and then you go on to whatever.
Well, you know, this is the only way I can look at this. I understand how, since I have run into so many people who have very stringent religious backgrounds who feel that maybe this is the work of the devil or this is evil or you should not do that, I can only say this. And this means more to me than what someone else told me I should believe. I know that since I have found out that I am more than this physical body, I know that the people that I have had in my life and affected in my life and that continue to come into my life, that I affect them in a positive sense. They definitely feel more they feel comforted, that I'm able to share something with them that is happening to them without their consent. It's happening whether they want to do it or not. So I know that, and it's been a long, I've been lecturing about this for a couple years now, and I've been having it all my life, and I know that I get hugs from people who say thank you because I thought I was something was wrong with me, and like my mother, 76 years old, she's had an experience with her guardian angel after 70-some-odd years, and now she understands a lot more of who she is. I can't see there would be anything wrong with finding out and talking to guardian angels and guides that are around you. That's what they're there for. A lot of times we become so immersed and so submerged, I should say, in the everyday-to-day life of living here on Earth that we're not able to hear them.
All right, let me ask you a question that will get you in more trouble.
All right.
Is organized religion a barrier, a detriment?
Oh, man, Art.
toward experiencing a rich, full, spiritual life, as you have described?
I'd say, Art, in some cases, there are religious dogmatic beliefs that hold you back from finding out who and what you really are. I have a problem, especially when the result or the manifestations of this understanding and finding these things out have all been positive. I have a problem when people say you can't do these things, especially when no one's being hurt and when people are benefiting. Just because they say you can't. Most of the people, matter of fact, I'd say 100% of the people who've told me this is evil or this is something negative, 100% of those people are non-experiencers. People who have had near-death experiences have thought that this is the most wonderful thing, capability you could ever, ever imagine. Look at the popularity of the near-death experience books. So I have a problem when people tell you you can't find out more about yourself or that you shouldn't talk to angels and guides. I think that they are here for us to talk to, and I think most of us aren't listening. That's why we get ourselves into trouble.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Albert Taylor. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Where, pray tell, are you?
Rochester, New York.
Okay, you're going to have to yell at us a little bit. I can barely hear her,
okay,
too.
Okay, can you hear me?
You got to talk right into that phone. That's what they make that mouthpiece for.
Okay, is it better?
Oh,
yes.
Much better.
Okay, I'm a little nervous.
Oh, that's okay.
Okay, but
me
I
too.
Do. Okay. I have been experiencing a certain kind of blowing up, like kind of, I can only describe it inside of my body. And it feels like someone's blowing into a balloon and just kind of blowing it up.
Wow.
And it feels like a spiritual movement happening, and it's on an everyday basis. And I feel a lot different than everyday people.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I was kind of wondering, have you ever experienced anything similar to this? And I'm having dreams that are very, very like spiritual, mm-hmm. dreams of four horses coming to me on armors. All kinds of stuff has been pretty much happening. I'm young, and I really don't know what's going on.
You know what I would ask you, ma'am?
What?
I would ask you, certainly you know how you feel, but you say you feel so much different than everybody else. How do you know how everybody else feels?
I don't. I really don't.
So maybe you're not so abnormal, you know? Maybe everybody feels these kinds of things. Albert?
Well, without knowing, when you say you feel differently, do you feel more aware?
Well, she just said, as though, she's not here, but as though air was being blown into her, and ever so much more spiritual.
I've never heard that description of the phenomenon, but that doesn't mean that is still not a way of them tapping in or linking up with you. The fact that she's getting visions tells me something else is going on. And the thing about, she talks about the horsemen. I mean, that's like the four horsemen of the apocalypse.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, a lot of the things that we experience, now they're talking to us all the time.
All right, I'll tell you what, we'll pick this up when we get back,
okay.
All right? Stay right there. We will be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from September 5th, 1997. Radio Networks presents Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight's program originally aired September 5th, 1997.
Good morning. Want to hear something really, really eerie?
You may still have time, you might still be fine. Every time I think about it, I want to cry. The bones and the devil, the kids keep coming. Don't wait to be
easy. Now listen to this. And I couldn't agree more. I've been feeling it all night long. All night long. Art? Hearing Al's delivery, content, feeling, tone, and interpretations of all this, I could swear that I'm listening to Danyon Brinkley. Perhaps in a way, we are. If Danyon could hear this tonight, I think he would be very pleased. Maybe. Just maybe he's listening.
The gentle sweet singing breeze in the wind, the whisper that calls after you in the night, and kisses you here and there in the night.
Kind of like traveling with your soul. That's what reminded me of this song somehow. Kind of works, huh? Good morning.
...1997, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
I've really got to say, I agree with this taxer. It's been haunting me all night.
Uh-huh.
You know, Danyon's on my mind. You sound just like Danyon.
Well, you know, I think that, they say we are one, or we're all of the same stuff. I think what Danyon's experiences, you know, that has changed him profoundly. My experiences that I've had have changed me profoundly. And what they've done is awakened me to a greater part of who I am and who we are, and the same with Danyon. So the fact that I'm echoing him and he's echoing me is kind of a confirmation to me, telling me that we're both on the right track.
I've been getting a lot of faxes today, and as you well know, of course, Princess Di met a very untimely death.
Right.
Her burial probably underway about now.
Right. And let's not forget Mother Teresa.
And Mother Teresa. And I've been getting a lot of faxes all day referring to these two passings,
mm-hmm.
and suggesting that the good people are leaving now, and I'm beginning to feel left out. In other words, suggesting that something major is about to occur and the better souls are on their way now ahead of whatever tribulation lies ahead.
I don't know. My mother is in her 70s. I like to think she's a good soul. She's just hanging out to help people.
All right. Here comes the public again. Are you ready? Yes. All right. First time caller line, you're on the air with Albert Taylor. Hi.
The question I have is, about 10 years ago, I had an experience.
Mm-hmm.
And what I had was, I fell asleep after a real rough, hard night.
Mm-hmm.
I just moved into a home. And I was very, very half asleep and half awake when I heard a loud noise at the back door. Well, you know how you want to get up, but you really don't.
Mm.
And when I finally mustered up enough energy to get up, what happened was I kind of got up pretty quick and flipped on the light. But I had no light. So I figured, well, it was a bulb. I went to the back room, back door, checked my back door, and it was locked. And when I went to check the front door, it was locked. I noticed it was raining out. When I went back to my room, just before I went to the doorway, my hand reached up to the door. And going through, it was solid as a rock.
Mm-hmm.
And when I touched it going back, it was like a marshmallow. And, you know, it was dry and everything, but, you know, my hand just kind of like a sponge.
Mm-hmm.
And when I thought about it a second, I jumped back because I was pretty scared.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happened was I reached out again, and my hand went straight through it like smoke.
Right.
And I got pretty scared. I thought maybe I died in my sleep or something.
Mm-hmm.
But when I went to the front door and looked out my front door, I saw it was raining out. I could see the direction the rain was falling and everything, the lights out in the streets.
Mm-hmm.
But when I went back to bed, I was scared. I jumped back in bed, laid down, thought, well, maybe I can wake up. So I rolled around, tossed and turned. When I finally did get up, I put the light on again. Nothing. I actually could not turn on anything. So after I
wonderful.
Did, after I did this a couple of times, you know, I really had, it was a good experience, but it was also kind of frightening.
Uh-huh.
But I couldn't wake up for nothing until my wife kind of rolled over and nudged me.
Right.
Recently, I'm awake.
Right.
I'm shaking like a leaf.
Wonderful.
So what do you make of this?
Well, you are out of body. No doubt about it. So many people, because when you have an out-of-body experience, it doesn't feel very abnormal. And a lot of times, you don't know it. You think you're in your physical body. Because you feel as if you have legs, arms, and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So many people get up in the middle of the night. That's one of the best indications, is if you wake up twice. Where you wake up once and you get up and walk around, and then all of a sudden you find out you never did any of that. You were very disconnected where you came back and put your arm through the wall and all that. That's wonderful.
Yeah,
it really is.
It seems so wonderful at the time.
Of course not, because it's the unknown. It's a new experience, and you don't know how to take it. And you automatically, we as humans always jump to the negative, so we automatically think there's something wrong with this. But that's because of our conditioning. All it was is that you didn't know what was going on. But it's truly wonderful. Think about this. Before this happened, and now that it has happened, don't you think of yourself as a little bit different than you did before?
Oh, very much so.
See, that is a part of the awakening. You are waking up to the spiritual power. I'm going to quote Danyan, powerful spiritual being that you truly are. I think that is totally wonderful.
Well, lucky you. Explore it and let us know how you do. But
definitely.
It sounds like he was on the right track.
He's on his way.
Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Albert Taylor. Hi.
Good evening. This is Chris in Houston.
Hi,
Hello, Chris.
Chris.
How you doing? I have a question. I experienced sleep paralysis for one period of my life, but never since then. I was just wondering if I can get an answer on why not. It happened when I was in seventh grade. I would wake up for school, get ready, and then while waiting for the bus, I would lie down on the couch and watch the Flintstones, and then I'd fall asleep sometimes. And while I was asleep, I could sometimes hear the bus, and I'd think, okay, I have to wake up and get outside to catch the bus. But sometimes I would, you know, wake up and experience the paralysis.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't move, and it actually caused me to miss the bus a few times.
Did you use that as an excuse?
Nobody believed me. I tried it a few times. But
I see.
But the thing is that it only happened then. I figured that every time that happened, I was lying on my back. Normally when I sleep on my side or on my stomach.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a possible reason?
Well, sleeping on the back is one of the best ways to leave the body. When I sleep on my side or on my stomach or something like that, I generally don't have an out-of-body experience. I think,
really?
I'm not exactly sure why. I just know that it's very easy for people to leave or the physical body in what's called the earth position, and that's when you're flat on your back.
Well, that would probably explain it, because I never sleep on my back.
Right, right. And the paralysis that you had, I mean, all of that is a symptom that that you were disconnected from the physical. I don't know if you didn't want to go to school or not. I thought you were going to tell me that an astral dog ate your homework or something like that.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Okay.
You're welcome. It would be hard enough to explain, as you pointed out. Well, I was paralyzed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's very difficult. I had a tough time trying to explain it to my doctor when I wanted to get her advice. And I didn't want to sound like I was paranoid by saying, hey, doctor, I'm worried about being paralyzed, or doctor, I can't move at night. And she'll say, well, no one can after they fall asleep. So it's a very tough thing to describe to a person.
So then how did you...
Eventually, I just put it in as simple terms as I could. I said, doc, when I go to sleep at night, I wake up in the middle of the night, and I feel paralyzed, but I'm perfectly alert, and I can see the room. And she, because she was having the experiences, and I guess because she was having it, she thought it was no big deal. Only thing she could offer me was, oh, that's no big deal. That happens to me all the time. Don't worry about it. You're perfectly fine. That's what my doctor said.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Albert Taylor. Good morning.
Hi, this is Todd from Oklahoma City.
Hi, Todd.
Hi, Todd.
I was curious as to possibly locations affecting what we're talking about tonight.
Huh.
Locations?
Yeah, the reason is it happened to me one time, and I was flying for a company up in Alaska, up in St. Mary's, Alaska, and... there's a hangar that we used to have, and when we get fogged in, sometimes I'd go up there and catch some shut-eye. And that's the only time it's ever happened up there.
Hmm. Now, are you sure it didn't have anything to do with your sleep pattern? I mean, seeing that you were you in a different time zone than you normally would be?
And no, it was pretty much a location I worked at for... gosh, probably 6 to 9 months.
Hmm.
Maybe being in an aircraft hangar helped you take off.
Yeah, it was kind of like a pre-flight.
Well, you know, I was thinking at first, St. Mary's out there, there's a lot of history out there, and I was thinking just the place was haunted at first, because I was talking to another guy that I flew with once I moved into Anchorage, and he was based out there as well, and we both you know, slept in that same location, and it just kind of conversation brought up in one of our flights one day, and I told him about it, and he says, yeah, the same thing has happened to him out there, and he thought the place was haunted, but he didn't want to tell anybody, so we kind of kept it between the two of us. But it was a pretty scary situation when it happened. You know, I was on my back, like what you said earlier, and that's when it worried. I was definitely on my back, and I could see the room, but I couldn't move, and it seemed like there was something there, something about ready to get me. And so I started moving the hand or finger a little bit and you know, trying to get out of this thing the best I could. And finally I jerked myself awake, but it was pretty alarming experience.
Right. I understand that. Totally. Now, whether a geographical location has an effect on your capability to exit the body or any other thing, that may very well be. I mean, a lot of people talk about Sedona, Mexico, and how that's an energy vortex. I don't know, because all I know is that I am not affected by any location. I went on my way to Crete. I had to end up stopping in New York, and I had one in New York. And my students that I've had, they don't seem to be affected.
Al, I think you meant Sedona, Arizona?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm not sure if a geographical location does or does not have an effect on it, because I have been able to have experiences and have had students who've had experiences irregardless of geographical location. So I don't really know about that part.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Albert Taylor. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi there. Turn your radio off, please.
I just did.
That's good.
Good morning.
This is David from Dearborn, Michigan.
Hello, David.
You caught me in the middle of eating some lunch here. I wanted to ask a question about
lunch.
I was going to say the same thing.
Well, I work at night.
Oh, okay.
I wanted to know about the initial stage that right before leaving the body. I've felt this ever since I was really little. It felt like almost a Doppler effect, something coming towards me, and then as it passed, something leaving me. And it got really, really loud, you know, the vibration state.
Right.
And I never knew what it was until I heard your previous program on the Art Bell Show. Mm-hmm. And then I said, wow, that sounds a lot like what happened to me. But it happened so fast that I have no time to say, okay, settle down, just let it happen.
Mm-hmm.
It just happens, and it feels like I fly 5 feet out of the air and then smack right back down on the ground.
Yep.
And I feel like my arms and legs are everywhere, but then when I look around, you know, my arms are at my side and my legs are straight out, and I'm on my back like I was, you know, originally. And I want to be able to have some control so I can let it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I when I was little and had sleepovers and, you know, my friend next to me, I said, hey, did you see that, or did you feel that? Did you see me fly up in the air? And he's looking at me like, what's wrong with you? And, you know, it's something I knew was happening.
It's a sensation that you felt, but it was not a visual sensation or something someone else could see.
Right.
The loud noise is definitely a prerequisite to the experience. And it was extremely loud, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah.
Almost deafening.
Yeah.
If it were really a real sound, it might have even damaged your hearing.
I've heard that.
Yeah. That's part of it. That's when you're transitioning from a slower vibration, which is the earth, which is a physical plane, to a higher vibration, and you hear a lot of things. Sometimes the sound represents all, and this is something that I found out, all the thoughts in the area that you could possibly imagine.
Al?
It's like thousands of people yelling at you.
Al?
Mm-hmm.
I've heard that, and it's, you're right, it's deafening, and it's also frightening, and actually I'll go a little further. It's nauseating.
Mm-hmm. It can be. It can be. The thing that you want to do is transition past that as rapidly as possible. Now, You said that you were able to feel as if your arms and legs were flinging out in all directions or something like that?
Yeah.
Well, the astral body, what's interesting about the astral body is, yes, it does simulate arms, legs, and a torso and a head, but it is like, it's totally, it's like, you remember the old green Gumbies we used to have when we were a kid, the little green thing you could bend in any direction? That's kind of how the astral form is.
it can achieve, it can pretty much simulate any shape or distance or stretch or curve or even turn yourself into an astral pretzel. The astral body is capable of doing anything because, of course, it's boneless. Boneless and muscleless, and it's only a product of thought. So that might be why you felt that your arms and legs were all over the place, but then when you looked at your physical body, they weren't.
Right. But what I'm saying is, at that point, I mean, it comes and goes so quickly that I have no time to allow it to, you know, when that, as that vibration leaves,
mm-hmm.
it's like I'm back in my body and everything. Okay.
The
know,
one thing you can do, or two things you can do. First of all, like I said before, if you've been listening to the program, I said the experience that you have while out of body or even the process of getting out of body, a lot of it responds to you saying, I want to do this. So next time that happens, say, I want the vibration to increase. I want to float up above my body.
Okay.
So try that next time and see what happens.
Okay.
All right, thank you. That's so easy to say and so hard to do.
Right. It takes practice, but that's the key. I want. And focus your thoughts on that.
For one thing, the experience itself is extremely short.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, very short, because you jerk back. And
and
so it would take a lot of mental discipline to somehow talk yourself into pulling back from fear at that instant and progressing. That's the big leap, isn't
well,
it?
Well, that's when the interrupted sleep technique comes into play, because that gives you that extra added leverage that you need, so your body won't respond to you even if you do feel fearful. It will still fall asleep because it needs sleep so bad. If you just do it normally, chances are that you could wake yourself up. But if you use the interrupted sleep technique that's mentioned in my book in Chapter 14, that will give you enough leverage that you possibly will be able to get out a lot easier.
Okay, I got a pretty provocative question for you here.
Mm-hmm.
You said that you could have sex in the astral plane, right? Don't laugh, because I'm going somewhere else here.
Okay.
If you can do that, then couldn't you kill or harm?
Kill or harm? I would say no, you could not, because first of all, you're not alone, and your guides are monitoring you every second of the way, and they're not going to let you disrupt someone else's life pattern or lessons that another person has to learn. They will stop you. As a matter of fact, Robert Monroe called it clicking out. And me, I call it just losing consciousness, where I was out of body, and the next thing I knew, I was dreaming and back in my body and had no idea how I'd gotten back. So there is such a thing as if you get in over your head, or you start behaving in a way that is not healthy for you or anyone else, there is a good chance that you experience what's known as it's clicking out.
All right. Have you ever met what you would consider to be an evil or demonic entity in astral travel?
I have met entities that their designs weren't in my own best interest. Evil is a strong word. Since I look at the entities I meet, I look at them as being on equal ground, depending on my fear, my ability to control my fear. I would say that I have met some entities that wanted to play games with me and wanted to tease me or try to scare me.
Those are all very carefully chosen words.
Mm-hmm. Because I don't want to seem sound like there's some kind of all-powerful demonic being out there that's going to be torturing these poor little souls that leave their body. It's not quite that way. You are very much on equal ground with most of the entities that you come in contact with, and the ones that you aren't are so enlightened that you don't have to worry about them being a threat.
I got you. All right, hang tight. We'll be right back. It's the bottom of the hour once again, and this is Linda. Remember that? Remember Linda back when she sang this? She defined cute at that moment.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time, tonight featuring a replay of Coast to Coast AM from September 5th, 1997.
Oh, The devil went down to Georgia. He was looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind, but he was way behind. He was willing to make a deal. When he came across this young man sewing on a fiddle and playing it hot, and the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, "Boy, let me tell you what. I guess you didn't know it, but I'm a fiddle player too. And if you'd care to take a dare, I'll make a bet with you. Now, you play pretty good fiddle, boy, but give the devil his due. I bet a fiddle of gold against your soul, because I think I'm better than you." The boy said, "My name's Johnny, and it might be a sin, but I'll take your bet, and you're going to regret, because I'm the best there's ever been. Johnny, rosin up your bow and play your fiddle hard, cause hell broke loose in Georgia and the devil deals it hard. And if you win, you get the shiny fiddle made of gold, but if you lose, the devil gets your soul." Up his case and he said, "I'll start this show," and fire flew from his face.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from September 5th, 1997.
Good morning. My guest is Al Taylor, and he is the author of Soul Traveler, which is going to be a television and soon maybe a movie. He's written a screenplay himself, smart move. Hopefully he can get on set and keep directorial disintegration from occurring.
Started by Art Bell back in 1995, and it's still going strong 13 years later. Call right now to subscribe. It's $39.95 for 1 year and contains a variety of different subjects every month, just like we do here on Coast to Coast AM. There are stories about the supernatural, strange science, human oddities, plus you'll find interviews with frequent guests, my monthly column, and much more. Call 1-888-727-5505 or go online at coasttocoastam.com.
Here's what you missed on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
The threat of terrorism is going to be looming over us for a long, long time, I'm afraid. Do you think the globalists think they've won or they're winning?
Everybody feels it. We are fast on the road to becoming a police state. The choice that we face is freedom or control. And that's where I see millions of people around this country taking a very firm stand on the side of freedom.
Now we take you back to the night of September 5th, 1997, on Art Bell, Somewhere in Time.
Here's Albert Taylor once again. Stretch run, Albert. We're almost done. Five hours. Whoosh, going
it's
like that.
It's been a thrill. Once again.
Good. First time caller line, you're on the air with Albert Taylor. Hi. Okay, where are you?
I'm in Missouri.
Missouri, you're going to have to speak right into your phone.
How's this? Is this better?
Well, into the mouthpiece, yeah.
Okay. Albert, you were talking about these spirit guides not being evil.
Uh-huh.
And I had an experience when I was in the Air Force that kind of really scared me. And my mother has done exactly what you're talking about for a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to ask her about it. She never would talk to me about it until I grew up. And I wrote her a letter once and asked her if it was okay to do this because I was unsure. She said, "Yes, it's fine."
Mm-hmm.
So I was stationed in Wyoming at the time, and I decided that I was going to do this and go home. So I laid down in my bed, and I concentrated on home really bad. And the next thing I know, I'm sitting up out of my body.
Mm-hmm.
And a buddy of mine walked through the bathroom that we shared because I lived in a dormitory, and it's like somebody grabbed me by the back of the head and just pulled me back down. And it scared me so bad I said, "I'll never do this again." Well, I had this experience about like a month later where I was sleeping and I dreamt that I floated up out of my body about 2 feet. And from the corner of the room, the right-hand corner of the room, this thing, it was black, that's all I know, attacked me.
Mm-hmm.
And we started rolling around in the air and wrestling, and it wouldn't talk to me with its mouth, but it would, I guess I could hear its thoughts, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
How it was communicating to me, but it was, and it was telling me that it was going to get into my body. Well, it scared me. It mm-hmm. scared me really bad, and eventually I sunk down into my body and I woke up thinking I had a really bad dream until I sat up at the end of my bed. I saw that creature, and he was laughing at me.
Hmm.
And, I mean, this was 4 years ago, and I've seen him since then.
Mm-hmm.
I'll see him in the house. I'll see him in the basement.
So you see him whether you're in the paralysis or not, you see him just walking around?
Yeah, and actually he doesn't walk around too much. He just stands there and stares at me sometimes. I mean, like I'll be walking down the stairs or something, and he'll be in a corner. And it's totally unexpected. It doesn't scare me anymore. It startles me a little bit, but, I mean, I don't understand what to make of it.
Sure as hell would scare me.
It would scare me, too.
It scared the hell out of me because he was laughing at me. And I remember he was blacker than a shadow.
Uh-huh.
Okay? And he had dark blue hair. Now, don't ask me how I saw the color of his hair, but I did.
Mm-hmm.
And his teeth were as white as ivory. And he was laughing at me. Mm. And I could see the whites of his eyes.
Hmm.
Very bad.
That's a new one on me, especially since you see it whether you're in the state of paralysis or not. While out of body, I could probably give you some examples of what you might be seeing. But the fact that you see it when you're walking around in the physical, I'm not exactly sure what to make of that.
I'm not the only person.
I did say that I don't label the entities that I've run into as evil, but I do say that I have run into some that have tried to play games with me and scare me and do a lot of other things. But what I realized is that I am not on uneven ground. I'm very much equal to them. I just didn't know it. And if I could control my fear, usually I'm very capable of handling the situation.
Well, see, I thought that I was the only person seeing this thing for a long time, but my wife has seen it. All my friends, well, my close friends.
That's even worse.
I've seen it. And it's like it follows me around. I mean, I moved down here from Wyoming, and it's sometimes I'll see it here in my house.
Have you ever tried to communicate with it?
No.
Maybe next time, and this is just an experiment that I would want you to do if I were studying the case, I would want you to ask it, what do you want? Who are you? Some kind of query. You never know. It may not answer, but you never know. It may have something to input.
Well, it used to scare the hell out of my wife because one night we were sleeping and she woke me up screaming and she said there was somebody on the ceiling. I thought, you got to be crazy. It's 4 a.m. There's nobody on the ceiling. But she said, and she described exactly what I had seen.
Mm-hmm.
And then the same night or a night later, I don't remember, she had seen the same thing, only he was sitting on the floor looking at us.
Mm.
And this is, I don't understand what to make of it, and no, it scares me.
I'll give you some advice. Go see an exorcist. I'm serious.
I've never thought about that.
Well, think about it.
Yeah, I wouldn't cross it out.
Yeah.
I'm not a very superstitious person or anything like that, but if you're having a situation that is frightening like that and more than one person is seeing it, I would seek alternative methods to rid yourself of the problem.
I sent my buddy in.
You have nothing to lose.
I sent my buddy into my house one night because he didn't believe me.
Mm-hmm.
I sent him in there. And he came out, and he said he'll never go into my house alone again.
Yeah, well, there you are.
He never did tell me what he saw.
Trust me, see an exorcist, all right?
I'll do it.
All right, take
care. Good luck.
That's serious.
Yeah, that is, very much so.
Do you believe we reincarnate? You obviously do, that we have many lives. We definitely reincarnate.
Definitely,
definitely.
And up to hundreds of times, not just once, twice, three times.
With the aim being... Why, in other words?
Why?
Yes, why?
Well, during the life experience, during a lifetime, we learn a lot of things. And a lot of the things we learn have to do with maybe love, compassion, acceptance, tolerance, and a host of other things. Sometimes more times than not, we don't get all of it or don't evolve or accept all of it in one lifetime. Sometimes we leave lessons undone, so it takes numerous lessons in some cases or expressions or lifetimes to absorb this information and to actually practice it. So that's one of the reasons that we do reincarnate is because we are evolving, and we are evolving toward perfection. And when I say perfection, I do mean co-creator with God. You're not going to be flawed when you're coke. You can't be angry and hold resentments if you're going to have incredible power to co-create, because you would misuse it. So it kind of works hand in hand. Like Sai Baba said once, an individual, Sai Baba is an avatar in India, and he manifests all kinds of things, vibhuti, which is sacred ash, jewelry, rice, and a host of other things. Another guy, one of his followers, said, I'd like to be able to manifest jewelry and money. And Sai Baba said, when you have risen to the point or evolved to the point where you can do these things, you will no longer have a need for them. So it kind of works that way, that's what we're doing, is we're evolving to the point, and reincarnation seems to be the best vehicle for us to have these earth life experiences or expressions, and which help us to evolve. I know it has helped me tremendously just in this lifetime alone.
All right. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Albert Taylor. Hi.
Yeah, I would just like to say hello. Goodbye.
That was quick.
That was probably Baba Booey or something.
Yeah, and he forgot that part. Some of those guys have that problem. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Albert Taylor. Hello.
Hello, good morning. I want to briefly send my love and prayers to Daniel Brinkley. I can't get him off my mind. But first of all, I'd like to ask him a question. He told a story earlier about the lady who was using the soul travel to find missing keys and stuff like that.
Well, really, she was using an altered state of consciousness right before going to sleep.
So could I use that similar thing to find a missing relative?
You could, yes.
Now, Mike, one concern is, I thought the answer would be yes, but I'm not sure if this person is living or not.
Mm-hmm.
And what would happen, what would you suspect if I found this person and they weren't living?
Well, if you were, let's say you left your body and you want to use astral projection or soul travel to find the relative.
Right.
If they were deceased and you were thinking about them, they would come to you.
Hmm.
And
okay.
You would see their spirit. So that would be one way of verifying what's going on. If they were living, you would be drawn to them.
Okay, so there would be no danger involved if they were not living then?
No, there's no danger at all.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much. Over to west of the Rockies, you're on the air with Albert Taylor. Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
My name is Dan, calling from Spokane, Washington.
Hello, Dan.
Hi. It's a pleasure to talk to both of you. Bart, I love your show.
Thank you.
I'd like to share a couple of experiences I've had kind of along this, and I always never really thought much about it. I'm Native American, so I don't know if that I seem to be kind of more spiritual than most people.
I'd give you that.
And during about a 6-month period, I started having really intense dreams, and kind of like what one of the callers said previously about a black figure.
Mm-hmm.
During these experiences, I started experiencing this through, like I said, a series of dreams that lasted about 3 months, and they were a lot more than dreams, and they all varied. I actually could have swore I've talked to people that were deceased.
Deceased?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I, total strangers.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was really odd that, you know, they said, well, you know, we're dead. And I was amazed by this. And they told me that in the afterlife, that the existence of it was whatever you wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever you wanted, whatever you can imagine, that was the existence.
Right.
And I thought that was really odd, you know. I told my mom about it, and, you know, she's very spiritual as well. So, you know, she told me that I communicated with the deceased.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, so that was just one of these strange dreams I had. I've taught myself to fly in my dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of started out this whole series of dreams, was teaching myself to fly, because this black figure would chase me.
Right,
and
here we go again.
Yeah, it was very odd, and it would always appear as a silhouette or a shadow, and
mm-hmm.
very ominous,
mm-hmm.
very ominous, and chase me in large buildings with what appeared to be buildings, I guess, with no doors, you know, experiences like that. And then I started to realize I had, I guess, what you would call a guide,
mm-hmm.
an elder Indian, Native American, mm-hmm. came to me and basically taught me that I could be anything in my dreams that I wanted, anything I could imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one time, this black figure is chasing me in this dream, or what I perceived to be as a dream, and it was very real. I mean, much more real feeling than any dream I've ever had.
Very vivid.
Yes, very, very vivid. I mean, smells, the adrenaline was unbelievable, and the utter fear. And basically, this figure was chasing me, and it entwined me. I mean, it was shapeless at times and totally entwined me, and I was struggling to get free, and then I realized, I remembered what this elder Native American had told me, and I transformed myself into a wolf and actually overcame this dark being. And ever since I overcame this being, I have not been able to reach that point of dream awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess overall my question is, how could I start to, I guess, get back into that state of mind or that state of spiritual or dream awareness?
Have you read very many books on the subject?
No, I haven't.
I suggest my favorite book, Soul Traveler.
Yeah, I imagine that.
It's actually kind of an instruction manual.
Yeah, it is. It's a guide. It's a guide to help you achieve exactly what you just asked me about. And I dedicated I dedicated chapter 14 to techniques on how to do this. And you can read the others, which kind of gives you a lot of familiar things that have happened to me and a lot of things that I've learned along the way. But the chapter 14 pretty much has the techniques on how to do this, and I suggest that you read that. And in chapter 14, the most valuable piece of information that I could possibly offer anybody is the interrupted sleep technique.
Mm.
And read it and perform it exactly as I said, without any reservations or ideas on how it should turn out, and just do it several times in a row. Just, you know, and you'd be surprised that you probably will have some kind of result.
Great. Art, could you give that number again for his book?
Oh, you asked it just the right time. Sure. Go ahead, Albert. Give it again.
Okay. It's 1-800-220-2289. And I'd like to remind anybody again, in 10 of the books, there's a hidden $20 bill, and $20, and in 10 of the books, so you may end up getting the book free if you order right away.
So there's no condition to this. It's just sitting in there, huh?
It's just in there. There's just 10 out of whatever. It's just in there. So you get it and look at the dust cover, and there it'll be.
That's cool. That's like buying a Coke and finding something in the bottle top.
Yeah, it's like buying a Coke and then getting your 75 cents back.
Yeah, that's right.
Plus a dollar.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air. We don't have a lot of time with Albert Taylor. Hi.
Hello, Art, and hello, Albert.
Hello.
Hi, I'm calling from Akron, Ohio.
Yes, sir.
Welcome.
And I just was listening to your callers about the black figure.
Yes.
I'm also I'm a theology student and a biblical student. I study the Bible. Mm-hmm. Those guys had a run-in with the Prince of Darkness.
Yeah, you know.
I mean, that's really scary stuff.
I know. I was thinking the same thing, and I think we may have opened a whole new can of worms.
Yeah, absolutely.
That we may explore next week.
That would be a great idea because, you know, I want to tell all the callers out there and all the listeners, don't fool around with that stuff because it's really serious. Those could be fallen angels. And if the Bible specifically mentions fallen angels and evil entities, you know, displaced souls.
I hear you.
You want to fool around with.
I hear you. Enough reports like that, and we will explore that one next week. Albert, we are out of time.
It has been wonderful, Art, once again.
It has been, my friend, and we will do it again.
Great.
All excellent. Right.
I look forward to it.
Take care. Good night.
Okay. Good night, Art.
That's it, folks. And I'm going to go out a little different way tonight with thoughts of Danyon, and I hope you'll pray for him. He's probably facing surgery later today, tomorrow, very shortly, very serious surgery as well. So a thought for Danyon, huh? From the high desert. Good night.
I was a highwayman, along the coast roads I did ride, sword and pistol by my side. Many a young maid lost her baubles to my trade. Many a soldier shed his lifeblood on my blade. The master hung me in the spring of 25. But I am still alive.
I was a sailor. I was born upon the tide. With the sea I did abide. I sailed a schooner around the Horn of Mexico. I went aloft to furl the mainsail in a blow. And when the yards broke off, they said that I got killed. But I'm living still. I was a dam builder across the river deep and wide, where steel and water did collide. A place called Boulder on the wild Colorado. I slipped and fell into the wet concrete below. They buried me in that great tomb that knows no sound. But I'm still around. I'll always be around, 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 around. I fly a starship across the universe divide. And when I reach the other side, I'll find a place to rest my spirit.